I expected more. All right, I would like to go ahead and call the meeting to order and invite you all to stand in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Now let us begin our roll call.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Anand.
Here.
Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Vice Chair Fuller.
Here.
Chair Maynard.
Present.
Thank you.
Now we will open it up for public forum. At this point, I do not believe that I have any speaker slips for the public forum.
That is correct.
With that, I will close the open public forum, and we will move to our administrative agenda. Our first item in the administrative agenda is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of February 13th, 2017. And can Madam Clerk read the recommendation?
The recommendation is to approve the Planning Commission minutes for the meeting of February 13th, 2017.
Are there any comments from the commissioners on the planning committee on the Planning Commission minutes of February 13th?
No comments, but I'll move approval.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor, say.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Wonderful. So with that, we will move on to our next item, item B1. And we'll start by Madam Clerk reading off what item B1 is.
Item B1 is a public hearing. It's the proposed 33-unit Hollister Village apartments, 16 studio and 17 one-bedroom units with associated general plan land use and zoning designated changes, lot line adjustments, development plan amendment, and setback modifications located on a 1.84-acre site located at 7000 Hollister Avenue, APN 073-030-026-027-028-033, case number 16029, GPA RZ LLADPAM.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. With that, I will invite planning commissioners to express any ex parte communications that they had. So if they've had any site visits, met with the applicant, or talked with other folks to learn new information, please share that at this time.
I did visit the site on a couple occasions, once on my own, and I met with Connor Best from Westar. And I also have had conversations with Barb Massey about her statement that was submitted.
I would also like to disclose that I did a site visit on my own, and I did have a meeting with Connor Best. Everything that was discussed in that meeting is included in this public record.
Wonderful.
I drove by the site on my way to biology.
I've driven by the site several times, I would say about three times. I also had a phone call with the applicant's representative, Connor Best, on March 9th. And I think the questions, comments, and concerns expressed in that call are reflected in the public record. I also met with Mary Chang and staff today to discuss, and those issues are addressed in the presentation that staff will present as well.
As chair, I would also like to disclose that I have visited the site. I met with Connor Best earlier in the submittal process when this was first potentially coming to Planning Commission. And then I also had a follow-up phone call with Mr. Best this morning as well. Everything that we had discussed was also in the public record. Thank you.
Chair Maynard, can Commissioner Miller clarify whether he received any information that was not in the public record when you
I did not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I just what we hope to do today is we're going to have a staff report. Then we will invite the applicant to come up and speak. We will, at this point, ask questions of the staff and the applicant. Then we will open it up for public comment. I have three comment cards and welcome others to speak. Then we will take some additional comments from the applicant. We'll come up and respond to some of the questions and concerns that have been raised. Then we will close the public comment and go to deliberation. Is there any concerns from the commission on that approach? Okay.
Sounds good.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. So with that, let's go to the staff report.
Yes, good evening, Chair Maynard and commissioners, and welcome to our new commissioners, Commissioner Smith and Commissioner Miller. What's before you tonight is the Hollister Village apartment project, and I think most of the commissioners and the public is aware of where the project site is. It's referred as to the Westar project originally, and now is known as the Hollister Village. And the project that's under consideration is what we're calling the amended project. It's highlighted in that triangle piece. It's that 1.84-acre site, which we'll be discussing. And then the overall Westar site is 23.33 acres. It is located on Hollister, and on the east side is the South Glenany Road. So the Planning Commission is the advisory body for this project to make a recommendation to the City Council, and the Council is the final decision maker. So I'm sorry, the print is kind of small. I was trying to keep it on one slide. So to give some background on this project, I think is very important because there's been some history. October 2nd, 2012, City Council certified the Westar Mixed Use Village EIR and approved the Westar project for 266 multi-family units, 88,704 square feet of commercial space, and 5 three-story live-work units on a 23.55 acre, not 23.33, as I said earlier, acre site. There may be sprinkles throughout the documents that refer to 274 units, and that was what was proposed, but at the council meeting, the council actually approved 266. So within the Westar project, that triangular piece that was shown earlier, the amended project site, was approved for a 12,687 square feet commercial buildings and 5 three-story live-work units, and also a 0.42-acre park site. And that was all within the 1.84-acre portion of the site. A general plan, land use, and also zone change were approved from residential to commercial at that time. And so after council approved the project, there was a legal challenge that was filed by a nearby resident that resulted in a settlement agreement. The settlement agreement was to not build the commercial component and the live-work units, but instead to replace it with the 33 apartment project and to relocate the park. So to date, there's been 75,900 square feet of commercial retail spaces and 266 residential units have been constructed. So that's under what was approved with the 88,704 square feet. This project did go to DRB for some conceptual review, and DRB made some comments, and the applicant with the resubmittal has incorporated and taken DRB's comments into the site planning. So this slide shows the entire Westar, now known as Hollister Village, site. It includes the site that we're looking at, the amended project site, and it shows the two commercial buildings and the 5 live work, with the park on sort of the north side of the 1.84 acre. So the remaining part of what you see on the map has been constructed, and what's vacant is that triangular property. And what the application is for this amended project, is a general plan amendment to change the land use designation from community commercial to medium density residential. It requires a zone change from shopping center to design residential with a density of 20 units per acre. A lot line adjustment to modify 4 lots, and a development plan amendment for the construction of the 33 apartment units. Also requested is a modification for front yard, side yard, and rear yard setback reductions. And I'll go into all of those in detail in a little bit. So this slide shows the top two graphics, shows the existing land use to the left and then the proposed land use. So the existing is commercial, changing to residential. And same on the zoning on the bottom, shows what the existing current conditions are and what the proposal is to change. So you can see what's being amended or what's being proposed to be amended. And this slide shows what has been approved for the 1.84 acre site, with the left portion is the commercial buildings and then the five live work and the park on the north side. The amended project for consideration tonight is on the bottom, and that shows the two buildings. One contains 16 studio apartments and one contains 17 one-bedroom apartments, and the park has been relocated to the southern portion of the site. So to put things in context, I think it's this slide is really important for the comparison of knowing what's been approved and what is being proposed to be amended. And here's just a architectural elevation to show that the project will meet match up with what's been constructed, architectural design, colors, and materials. Here's a lot line adjustment map that shows the four lots, actually five, that to be adjusted in that green. The outline in black are the lot lines. So what went through the process for environmental review was that we prepared an addendum to the original West Star Mixed Use Village EIR. And that was the addendum was prepared to analyze the amended project's potential environmental impacts. The addendum addressed the amended project's effects related to environmental issues and also mitigation measures that were addressed in the West Star EIR. This addendum concluded that the amended project would not result in any new significant impact or increase the severity of previously identified environmental impacts in the West Star EIR. And just as a note, an addendum does not require through CEQA a public review period, but we did post it, place it at the library, and also at our, made it available at the city and on the website prior to your staff report. Okay. So some project considerations maybe of interest to the Planning Commission and the public we're going to go through is the change in the land use and zoning, traffic, water availability, the setback modifications that are requested, and also the open space requirements. So I'll go through each of these and discuss these topics. The land use designation and zone change would result to changing that the general plan land use and zoning designation back to residential, which the site was before the West Star project was approved. So it's sort of reverting back to what was in the general plan. So here's a map that shows the two top graphics again. You saw that earlier, but just to show the land use changes on the right and the zoning change on the bottom right. Regarding traffic, again, I'm sorry, the print is kind of small here. What we did was we took the certified EIR for the entire project, and then which included the commercial and the five live work, and compared it with the whole project with the 33 apartment units. And for the average daily trips, there was a reduction of 350 trips. The AM peak hour trips was reduced by 4, and then the PM peak hour trips were reduced by 27 trips. So that's just kind of to show that, and that was through a traffic study that was prepared and submitted. Here is a memo from the Goleta Water District. Since the print was small, it sort of summarized the total water demand with the 33 apartments. The amended project for the entire site would be 45.82 acre feet per year. And then the total allocated, the whole entire site has been allocated 46.67 acre feet per year. So there's enough water for the 33 units. And also, as a note, the landscaping will be used by reclaimed and recycled water, all the landscaping on the entire site. Regarding the setback modification, what we did was we took the red arrows to show you where the modifications, the reductions are needed. And this is sort of a tricky site to identify what is front, side, and rear, but we did our best per our definitions. And the, I have a pointer. The site, the portion that faces Glen Annie and South Glen Annie Road and also Village Way is considered to be front yard setbacks as per code, and it requires a 20-foot setback. And then the rear yard setback is considered sort of along where the park area is. And then there's a setback that's considered the side yard setback, which is in the middle, and that where the two buildings share a property line. So in the front yard setback, we have parking carports, trash enclosures. I'm not very good at this pointer, and also mailboxes. And the rear setback, there's just portions, corners of the buildings that encroach, and it is, you know, setting back to the open space park. And then the side yard setback in the middle there is again shared by the property line, the same property line, and it is the same owner for the entire site. We feel that these setback modifications are considered minor because they're not really adjacent to another property owner, and it's in the interior of the entire site, and the intent was to provide for better site planning and open space layout. So speaking of open space, there is a 40% landscape and open space requirement in the design residential zone. And even though the site includes the park as part of the project, it does not count towards the 40% because the park was used for the original residential portion of the entire project, so that it was allocated towards that 40%. And because of that, the applicant is trying to meet the 40%, which is pretty difficult for, you know, after you take out the park, and being creative to request rooftop features for to count towards 40% open space, which is has been commonly practiced with other jurisdictions, in including Santa Barbara. So on the rooftop, there'll be landscape, chase and lounge areas, and planting trays for gardening. And also on the ground level, there'll be landscaping and open space. So what the open space does not include is all the hardscape, the parking, and pavement. So everything else was considered open space, aside from the building. And here's a larger plan that shows the rooftop features, the perimeter landscaping, and landscaping in between buildings. And then, again, the park is not counted towards that 40%. So just as the rooftop is about 9,000 square feet, and then the remainder on ground is about 16,000 square feet of open space. So I think I've covered the points, one and two, and just wanted to conclude that this project would replace 12,687 square feet of a previously approved project of that included commercial buildings and 5 live-work units, and to replace that with the 33 apartment units. The proposed changes will allow for sufficient residential units and commercial uses, and it maintains the mixed-use neighborhood plan for the site. And finally, the amended project will facilitate the placement of more compatible residential uses along South Glen Annie Road, where there's residential uses. It's a residential corridor, and which occurs to be more desirable than the previous commercial use. So with our recommendation, we're suggesting that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution that to recommend to the Council to adopt the addendum and approve all the project components that was outlined in the staff report. Before I conclude, there are some changes in the resolution that we've made prints of for you, and it's underlined, and it's mostly for just to clarify the project a little bit more. So on page one of the resolution, and this is the resolution that you would adopt recommending approval, Section 1A, the underline, just wanted to add the park as part of the project and to make that, you know, to clarify that the project description. And the next page, on the very bottom, on H, Section 2H, again, this was a clarification so that even though the park is located on the site, it's not counted towards the open space, and we wanted to include that in the resolution. Sorry, these don't have numbers. Well, they do have numbers. Okay, page 4 on top. The outline section is to clarify what was previously approved. So we made some changes there to just for some clarification. And then the next flip, page 6, we added some language here for the setback modifications. It got a little confusing as to where and what was being, you know, encroaching into the setback. So we tightened the language there. And then on page 7 on E, same thing. We just wanted to, tighten up the language. And I believe that's it. So we just wanted to state that on record, those revisions, and we will make the changes when this goes to council. So with that, thank you for listening, and I'll be available for questions.
At this point, what we'd like to do is invite the applicant up to give a presentation, and then we will have questions for both staff and the applicant after the applicant presents.
Good evening, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Connor Best. I'm with Westar Associates, and I'm here to present this amended project for the Hollister Village project. We consider this to be our final phase or triangle portion of the project, which is kind of an infill portion of the project. Staff, we'd like to thank staff for doing such a great job in their presentation, and we have a lot of the same points, so I apologize in advance for the redundancy, but I think they did a very good job. So first, why are we here? So at our last city council hearing, it was suggested that we explore developing smaller studio apartments as an option. We're modifying the project to address comments from that city council meeting when the project was approved and expressing a desire for inclusion of smaller apartment units and also satisfying some suggestions from neighbors east of the project. So based on neighborhood input and the input from the council, we're suggesting to change the uses of this mixed-use project, so changing it from retail to apartments. So this is just the 1.84 acre remaining acres of undeveloped land of our 23.55 acre approved project. So we think the general plan amendment and zone change will encourage more compatible residential uses along South Glenany Road. So again, we're eliminating 3 retail buildings and replacing them with 2 apartment buildings. Which requires a rezoning, a general plan amendment, and a lot line adjustment. So we're adjusting the mix of land uses in the project to mirror the uses on the other side of the street, as I said before, and providing another type of rental housing that wasn't included in the original project. So kind of expanding that the rental range of available product in the project. So, and we do think that we will be the only project with studio rentals in the city of Goleta. So brief history of the project site. The original GP zoning was, the entire site was 20 designated units per acre, and it had a mobile home subdivision. And the current zoning, as staff had a better slide comparing the two, but residential mixed use, or residential DR20 and CC shopping center. So the approved mixed-use project has 12,700 square feet of retail and 9,500 square feet of shopkeeper living or live-work apartments, which consisted of 5 3-bedroom units. And the proposed mixed-use project is 2 buildings with 33 apartments, a mixture of 16 studios and 17 1-bedroom units. So here you can see the approved site plan on the left and the amended site plan to the right. So you can see when it was the approved project, we fronted it kind of to the south to incorporate it into that portion of the use. And this amended project, we have the buildings kind of fronting to the north with a landscape buffer to the south of it, kind of delineating the mix of uses in this project. So Hollister Village is the only mixed-use project in Goleta, providing housing and neighborhood shopping in one project built at one time. It provides critical workforce housing. It's compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. It's walkable neighborhood, transit-oriented, with on-site recreation, and it reduces the city of Goleta's jobs housing imbalance. So Goleta is an economic powerhouse on the South Coast and in the county as a whole. The city has done a good job encouraging job growth through a variety of initiatives for the benefit of the community and its citizens. However, Goleta has always lagged in the provision of housing, and this is still the case today. Goleta's ratio of jobs to housing is the worst in the South Coast. The ratio is 1.9 to 1. Goleta has 10.8% of the county's jobs, but only 7.5% of the county's housing. The result is a heavy commuting into and out of Goleta from people who live in other parts of the county, such as Santa Maria and Ventura County. About 6,700 people commute into Goleta from outside the city every day to get to work in the morning and to return home in the evening. The result is heavy congestion along Highway 101 and increased greenhouse gas emissions. The city's original council recognized this problem and so designated the then vacant properties along the Hollister corridor as medium density residential. This was all incorporated into the city's first general plan. The city's goal was to have both a vibrant economy and to provide housing so the greenhouse gas emissions could be reduced. Because for sale housing prices are so high, rental housing should be the priority. Hollister Village is part of the Hollister Corridor housing component contemplated by the city's general plan. We currently provide 266 rental units, assisting in reducing the city's job housing imbalance. This development plan amendment proposes 33 studio and one bedroom apartments, which fills deficiencies in the city's current inventory of rental units. This project followed a blueprint laid out in the city's general plan. This is an infill project that did not expand the urban envelope of the city. It was surrounded on three sides by developed property and on the north by the 101 freeway. We designed the project to reduce greenhouse gas emissions using general plan policy CE 12.4 as the inspiration of the project. So now I'm going to walk you through this policy so you can see exactly what we kind of took as our inspiration. So we provided new housing near existing workplaces, new housing near existing bus routes, new housing near the US 101 ramp, and new housing, well, not quite towards the Amtrak line, but 3 out of 4 isn't bad. So the second point of this policy is clustering moderate density housing, an emphasis on moderate density residential development rather than low density sprawl, and integrating pedestrian, bicycle, and transit facilities into our development. Third item of this policy, coordinating signal timing and providing a bikeway system. So we feel like the general intent of this policy is kind of what guided our design of this project. So now I'll move into the project as currently built and take this opportunity to kind of fill you in on what we have achieved, what we were hoping to achieve last time we were here, and what we have accomplished. So with our currently built project, we have 75,900 square feet of retail and 266 apartments that are composed of 1 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms, and 3 bedrooms. So it's a local affordable housing option for the Goleta workforce. So we polled our residents, and 50% of our Hollister Village residents work in the city of Goleta. An additional 20% of our Hollister Village residents work in the South Coast, Santa Barbara, Montecito, Carpinteria. It's located on a major arterial, Hollister Avenue, with bus routes, bike paths, and close to employment centers, shopping, dining, entertainment, and recreation, all within walking distance. We improved vehicular circulation at Stork and Hollister and the US 101 southbound off-ramp, added bicycle improvements and safety features with consultations from the Bike Coalition to help you get over Stork, to get over the freeway there. We did underground the power lines along Hollister Avenue, and we consider ourselves the benchmark for responsible development and resource conservation. More specifically, we have fulfilled these sustainable features. Number one is water. We have a 1 million gallon capacity storm detention basin, which recharges the groundwater supply. All of our landscaping on site is irrigated with reclaimed water. We got verified as an ocean-friendly garden by the Santa Barbara County Water Conservation Coordinator and local Surfrider Foundation. Landscaping includes generous use of native drought-tolerant species. All of our fixtures and appliances are low flow and high efficiency. Our second area of sustainable design comes in the form of electricity. We have solar panels on our carports to recharge site lighting. We have high efficiency appliances and high efficiency lighting all over the site. Alternative transportation is another sustainable feature of our project. We have electric vehicle charging stations in both the apartments and the retail. We added a new bus stop on an existing route along Hollister Avenue. And we have many bicycle improvements along Hollister, Stork, that help you safely cross over the US 101. Natural gas, we have high efficiency doors and windows, high efficiency water heaters, and high efficiency HVAC units. Air quality, mixed use development has reduced car trips by 15 to 25%. So now some stats on our residents. I went through those a little already. So 95% of our residents shop at the Smart and Final Extra, which is the on-site grocery store walkable from their apartments. The majority of all of our residents fall into three groups of renters: commuters who wanted to be close to work, citizens that already lived in Goleta and wanted an upgrade, and empty nesters or retirees needing a downgrade. So when we originally designed this project, we were hoping to get the workforce, police, teachers, and nurses into Hollister Village. We're happy to report we have all three of those living in the project today. So Hollister Village's financial benefit to the city of Goleta: we've created approximately 250 long-term permanent jobs, and we've paid close to $8 million in development fees for what we've currently built. We've also completed many city infrastructure improvements. So we added new bike lanes, a bus stop, acceleration and deceleration lanes on Hollister Avenue. We added the new traffic signal at South Glen Annie on Hollister, timed that with the entrance to Camino Real and Stork, and did many improvements from the eastbound and northbound movement onto the US 101. We lengthened the turn pockets, we added a lane on northbound Stork, we added a second right-hand turn on the southbound 101. So now that I've given you an update on kind of the existing project, I'd like to move in to the actual project amendment we're proposing today. It is, if you go back one slide, it's that kind of orangish-yellow triangle there. So this space is approved for retail development, was never intended to be undeveloped, and this amended project is much less intensive than the approved project. We have less retail and more rental apartments, an expanded rental range. We're more compatible with the neighboring residential to the east, and it's less intensive than the currently approved project. Then we went on to analyze some important issues as staff did in their presentation. So I don't want to belabor the point too much, but we've had our allocation from the Goleta Water District for a number of years, and our water credit our demand is much less than the water that we purchased. So there are differences in my numbers and staff's numbers. My numbers are potable water here. Staff's numbers was potable and reclaimed. So they're both accurate, just apples and oranges. Next issue is traffic. This project amendment reduces overall project traffic. 350 less average daily trips than what was studied in the EIR. So we think that's very important to highlight. And then the next issue we're looking at is we have some excess dirt on the triangle. So if you drove by there, you might notice that the grading behind the fence is a little higher than the streets and curbs that are in there. This happened because the original geotech report assumed that we would have some shrinkage, and when we got out there, there was zero shrinkage, which just caused us to have some excess dirt. So we need to get that out of there in order to build on this. So this would add, you know, very minor short-term impact. So over the course of about 2 to 3 weeks, we'd have some trucks hauling dirt out, but they'd be turning right at the kind of the free right on Stork and Hollister, right on Glen Annie, go through the middle of our project and take a right behind Smart and Final to head west out on Hollister Avenue. So we assumed about 9 acre feet per truckload, about 12 truckloads per hour. So that's about 70 average trucks per day over the course of 2 to 3 weeks. So in the conditions of approval, there was a recommendation from Public Works that we kind of avoid the lunchtime hour. I'd ask the commissioners to consider allowing us to haul from 9 to 4 p.m. We don't think that there is an impact on that lunchtime hour, and it's not identified as a peak hour by the city. So it would just help us get the dirt out quicker and get out of everybody's hair quicker. So let me know your thoughts on that. The next issue is the size and scale of our project. We just think that these buildings will be largely screened by the existing building F and building E of the retail. They will be about 4 feet lower than the existing two-story apartment building just to the north. And we really don't think that will have much of an impact from any aesthetic view perspectives there. So again, we're just going back to the original density and zoning that was approved for this property and just kind of changing the mix of this mixed-use project. So the amended project benefits the additional workforce housing. The demand is extremely strong within the Glidden community, and the existing apartments are fully occupied. We're expanding the rental range with the studios and one bedrooms. Less traffic, it's a sustainable use, and we will have some additional traffic fees, about $650,000 coming to the city. So with that, I'd like to conclude my presentation, and I'm available for any questions. I'd also like to request the ability to rebut any public comments.
Wonderful. At this point, we'll take questions from the commissioners to either staff or the applicant. We'll then have an opportunity for the public to speak, and then we will also have an opportunity for the applicant to provide additional information after they hear both the questions and the public comment. With that, I will open it up to commissioners to ask their questions.
I guess I'll jump in.
Okay.
So just for clarification, Mary, when this item, my understanding is that when this item was considered by the design review board at the most recent time it considered the project, that the rooftop garden component was not part of the project at that time. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And do you have any general information? My understanding is that projects are subject to certain can be subject to certain changes by the planning director upon completion. Can you speak a little bit about what has changed since the project that is currently completed? What changes took place?
There was a substantial conformity determination that was processed, and that there in the code it allows certain criteria to be met in to be able to have our director approve that. And usually it's just minor tweaks from a large project. It could be mm-hmm. some design tweaks, some square footage changes, but there are some specific criteria. And there was a SCD that was processed, but it was in response to what the city council had changed at the meeting. So what was proposed was 274 units, and the council made some changes, and so staff had to process that SCD to have it on record that those were the changes from what was analyzed in the EIR. And then there were there were two buildings that had some facade changes. They were basically windows, doors, and but they did go to DRB for that process, and there was no square footage, no site changes. So those were the only changes from the originally October 2012 approval.
Could I ask for clarification? So it changed from 274 units to 266 units, and there were some facade changes related to windows and doors. Were there any other changes?
No, the only other change that's developed is that it's right currently it is not including the there was an approved drive-through for the building E, and I believe actually that the applicant may still, you know, come in with that component, and that didn't require any changes because it didn't change parking, it didn't change the design of the square footage of the building or site layout.
So there was a drive-through added after?
No, there was a drive-through that was approved
okay.
with the original project.
Oh,
it was a conditional use permit that was approved for a drive-through for Building E, which is
okay.
the lower where R&R Furniture is now.
Okay.
I think I can add a little bit to that answer.
Okay.
So in 2015, the city also entered into a settlement agreement with the developer, Goleta Hollister LLC, to I guess settle some issues regarding our GTIP, and so it did account for a developer impact fee. Originally it was around $3.6 million, and then we settled that case for a refund of $1.9 million, and to also agree to, so the settlement amount agreed to was $1.08 million plus $42,000 in credits, as well as allowing for the transportation development impact fees to be set according to what the fees were in 2013, with an amount not to exceed $15,522 per peak hour trip. So that's the crux of this settlement agreement regarding fees with the developer.
And then I just had a few questions regarding the addendum to the EIR. So it sounds like does the addendum contemplate any of the changes that have happened since you know that EIR was initially approved?
The addendum went through each section of the EIR comparing the approved project and then the amended project.
Mm-hmm.
There were updated traffic studies and updated studies in air quality and greenhouse gas emission. I think those are the studies that were, and then we had you know some engineering plans that were submitted that were that might have had some effect on some of the sections in the EIR, but the outcome of the process of the addendum showed that there was either equal or less impact in every category.
Mm-hmm. And does the addendum discuss, my understanding, part of this proposal includes certain setback modifications and encroachments. So does that addendum address those modifications?
The addendum has those modifications incorporated as a project description. It didn't analyze the actual setback modifications because there were no really environmental issues that were triggered by that.
Mm-hmm. And then this might be a question for both the applicant and staff, but I'm wondering, there's been just a lot of changes in the area since 2012. So in looking at the traffic analysis, you know, my understanding is the analysis compares sort of the original project as proposed to the current project as proposed. But I'm just aware there's been a lot of changes in the area. And so as a practical matter, it seems like there may have been changes to the Hollister and Stork intersection since 2012. And so I didn't know if that, and both, you know, I know that there have been mitigations in terms of lanes added, but also just a potential other impact. So I didn't know if the traffic analysis actually in the addendum sort of considers or if the applicant has information about what's actually changed since 2012 in the traffic situation.
I can call up our traffic engineer, Scott Schell with ATE, to answer that question for you.
Good afternoon. Scott Schell with Associated Transportation Engineers. And I had asked city staff today, as a matter of fact, if they had any new traffic volume information for the corridor. And as of about 4:40, came across the email, new traffic counts were done in 2016, October. And they included traffic volume data at Stork and Hollister, as well as Stork and the 101 southbound ramps.
And was that data included in your traffic studies for the addendum?
It was not. No, the addendum relied on a comparison of the traffic that was generated by the project as approved in its entirety and the current project. And as we heard staff present, it's a reduction in traffic, so no additional analysis was needed. The mitigation measures and improvements that were done, outlined in the EIR, have been implemented. So Stork was widened and the interchange was fixed. And basically, the results of the new counts show that things are equal to or better than they were back when, prior to the project, it's construction. And I asked the team when I came in this afternoon how much of the project was built and occupied in that October 2016 timeframe. And as I understand it, and they can clarify more, but the apartments were pretty much all leased out and occupied, and about 80% of the retail had been occupied at that time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Commissioner Miller. Do you have any comments?
Well, actually, I have some follow-up on the traffic. Should have had the gentleman stay up. The as I understand it, there was an updated or new study done with respect to the addendum, the new project?
That's correct. The as I just described, the analysis that was done was to take the parameters that were included in the final EIR for the project in terms of the trip generation rates and the calculations for that project were applied to the new project to see what the difference in traffic would be. And as we heard, it's a reduction in average daily traffic as well as AM and PM traffic.
So when you did the study, did you essentially make the same assumptions that you made in the first study?
That's correct.
Okay. And was one of the assumptions you made in the first study that the walkable nature of the development would have an impact on the amount of vehicle use by the residents?
That's correct.
And did that assume that they would be provided, it would become a walkable area because there would be essential services for the residents in the area?
Yeah, we call it the internal capture is the walkable. That's just the traffic term for it. So there is a model that we use that's published by the Institute of Transportation Engineers that gives us some parameters to see how much internal capture there's going to be. And part of the input of the model is the number of units, and the other input to the model is the square footage of the retail.
Does it also assume that there will be essential everyday type services such as pharmacies and dry cleaners and salons and those types of retail outlets available?
It doesn't get into the detail of specific uses. It says if you have retail and restaurants, you're going to attract some of the local citizenry, like we've got the restaurants. And I think we heard that the survey information they took from Smart and Fauna, which is the grocery store. So the model basically plugs in the overall square footage of the retail that's available to the residents. It doesn't get into really detailed descriptions of what that retail entails.
Okay.
So just to sum that up, the original model for the EIR assumed the full 90,000 square feet of retail with a 274 units. And I just happened to throw the math down while I was sitting over here. So its internal capture said we'd capture about 1,180 people, car trips would be captured, through that combination of uses. And for the new uses, it was a little lower because we got rid of some retail. And so the interaction was reduced to about 1,120 trips. So it did account for the loss of interaction from losing that 12,000 square feet of retail.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mayor, I have some questions about the open space requirement, just to be clear that I understand. And we had some exchange on this concerning the data. As I understand it, the park, the 0.42-acre park, is used to calculate the open space for the existing project, correct?
That's correct.
And if that park were taken out of the calculation for the existing project, would the existing project not satisfy or comply with the 40% requirement?
It does satisfy. We are removing the park for the calculation, so we're looking...
No, I'm talking about the existing project, the existing buildings.
Oh.
That part of it. If you took away, since the point the park is being used or considered as part of the existing development, if you took that away, would the existing development still comply with the 40% requirement?
No.
Okay. So, in this case, the 0.42-acre park is not used to calculate the open space, and the only way the open space requirement can be accomplished or complied with is the rooftop space.
That's correct.
And if you don't allow the rooftop to be part of the open space, then they would miss complying by 8,000 or 9,000 square feet.
Yes, 9,000.
Okay. And when you said that using rooftop spaces commonly used, do you have any examples of where that's...
Well, City of Santa Barbara does allow that.
You know how many times they've allowed it?
I don't know. I know it's in their code.
Yeah. Are you aware of any other city that has used rooftop space to be calculated as part of the open space?
I believe the applicant has a list of cities. I don't know if you want to...
Good evening. Troy White with DUDEC. And so we've actually studied this issue. The use of the rooftops for open space is common throughout the state of California and, in fact, throughout the nation. So there is City of Santa Barbara, Moreno Valley, Redwood City, Long Beach. I don't think of any other cities. So based on I did a cursory review one afternoon, I think it came up with about eight cities that were comparable to the city of Goleta with that type of use.
Can you explain the rationale for doing that? Since the point of open space is to have open space down at ground level for the public, I don't understand how the rooftop could have any impact on open space?
Well, that's a great question. And in fact, there's several different parameters by which one can provide for the openness of a lot. And so the city of Goleta has maximum building coverage. So they have a maximum building coverage of 30%. So if you're looking to determine, we want to have a certain amount of density on a piece of property, you're like, well, no more than 30% can be occupied by a building. The remaining 70% needs to be some other use. So in terms of that provides a feeling of openness. Relative to the city of Goleta's open space requirements, the intent, I believe, is in, and as it discusses within the zoning ordinance, and we can talk a little bit about that language, is that they're looking for recreational amenities. The zoning ordinance provides several examples in terms of tennis courts, gardens. So those open space amenities don't necessarily have to be located on the ground level. It's providing recreational amenities for the tenants or the owners, I believe is the intent of the common open space. And the building coverage requirements applies in terms of the density of a site.
But the open, but the rooftops in this situation would be limited to use by the residents, correct?
Yeah, and in fact, it's consistent with the zoning ordinance, which the common open space requirements are intended for the use and enjoyment of the occupants of the property. And so these aren't public common open space amenities. They're private amenities intended for the occupants and users of that particular development.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not sure who I direct this question to, but I have a question about the lawsuit that was settled between Galita Hollister and the private and the resident who lives nearby. I don't believe the city was a party. It's called the Marino. I think the title of
the Marino Center.
That may be the name of the plaintiff in the case, Marino.
Yes.
And as I understand it, the city was not a party to that litigation, correct?
So in the settlement agreement, we approved it as to form, and we did the plaintiff's did dismiss the applicant and the city with prejudice.
Okay, so the city was originally a defendant in the lawsuit when it was filed? Okay, thanks for that clarification. The settlement agreement then, as I understand it, the settlement agreement indicated that Galita Hollister would go back to the city to ask for the amendment, which is what we're doing here today.
Yes.
And settlement agreement also provided that if it's not approved, if this project, the amended project, is not approved, that they could go back and they would still have the authority to build something, but it wouldn't be exactly what they originally proposed. Would that?
Correct.
I believe
contract,
it said the,
yeah,
I'm sorry,
3B specifies if city rejects the modified project, Galita Hollister agrees not to apply to the city to replace the three commercial buildings with any retail, restaurant, or live-work uses, but Galita Hollister reserves the right to apply to the city for another modification to the project with residential or office uses.
So they could build an office building or they could build residential. Or a combination.
They'd have to come to the city to ask to
but they'd have to get approval for
yes.
it. Yes. Okay. Okay, that answers my question. Let me see if I've got... I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Commissioner Onan?
No questions.
Vice Chair Fuller?
Thank you. I have a couple questions. I guess the first one would be the general plan designation that this property had prior and the zoning, was that inherited from the county of Santa Barbara or was that in the original general plan for the city of Galita?
That was for, I don't know actually. I know if it was inherited or if we, yeah, I wasn't here.
He was apparently.
I've been on this project for some time as my colleague. So ultimately, you're still working on your zoning ordinance update, of course. So that mobile home subdivision is an old county requirement for the zone district. But of course, when the city became a city and they adopted their own general plan and the multifamily, not DRD, MD,
residential,
multifamily density.
No, medium density.
RMD, residential medium density was adopted by the city.
In the city's general plan that originally
in the original general plan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Another question, the applicant is proposing studios and one-bedroom units. The 20 dwelling unit per acre, I don't believe that makes a distinction between the number of bedrooms per unit. Is
that correct? No, it
does not. So the applicant actually could be in here asking for 33 four-bedroom units if they could be squeezed on there. Is that correct?
If all the other zoning requirements are met. And
including parking. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And just to clarify, all the traffic impacts that we're talking about here are just for this project, the 5,000 average daily trips, or is that for the total whole 266 units of the project?
That's for the entire project, for the commercial and the residential.
For the entire project?
Right.
Okay. So we're going to get
317.
Right. So how many?
Less trips.
How many average daily trips are there for this specific 33 units?
Do you have that answer, Scott? We have a table here. Look.
It wasn't clear whether, you know, they were talking about the whole project. I mean, they talk about the project, but the project is either the 1.84 units or the 23 acres.
Well, how it's compared is the overall Westar Hollister Village site that's approved with the commercial and the live work, comparing that with the amended project. So
I'd still like clarification.
Yeah,
as
we
to
probably have that in the.
Quick math. Scott Shell with ATE. The 33 units generates 219 average daily trips based on the apartment rates.
So then the commercial would have generated 500 or so, 550, something like that.
Plus correct? The live work, correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I think this is probably a question for staff. Would the front yard setbacks that we're being asked to approve for the parking and the trash enclosure and the setbacks between the two buildings, would those be required if this were all one parcel?
Yes, there would still be setback requirements, but
because
it
of
would
the
be
street?
Looked at differently. In other words, the setback, the side yard setbacks in between the buildings. Would not be there. There would be, I don't know if there would be a side yard setback. There wouldn't be.
There would just be a distance between building, zoning.
Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm.
And then the parking close to the street, if that was a private, is it still a private street?
Yes.
Yes. So, but if that was part of it, so that wouldn't change. I would still need a modification to have them within distance of the street. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. For on Village Way?
Right.
Along Village Way,
even if it was one all,
Yes.
Right.
One parcel.
That, in the rear yard and the two front yards.
Well, the rear yard is fronting on a
park.
Yeah, so that's our park, so,
right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So back to the rooftops, didn't we approve, or was that for private open space in Old Town Village?
They actually did not proceed with that component. They met their open space requirement without that.
Okay, so we haven't, as a city, approved any rooftop open space?
Not to my knowledge. They were doing the rooftop decks. I don't know that they were actually looking to include that as common open space.
Mm-hmm.
Private open space. Yeah, but they don't have that anymore.
Right, as common. So do we have we discussed that in the draft zoning element?
We certainly can.
Okay, but we haven't yet.
I don't know. I don't think so.
All right, so we haven't addressed that as a body at all. Okay. And I think this last one is, what's the total square footage of the 33 units that are being proposed?
Troy, I don't have my chart.
12,000. Commercial's 12,000.
Commercial's 12,000, and there's the five live work.
Right,
well.
But the current proposal for 33 units.
Bear with me a second here. So. The total square footage is 44,000. Let's see, is that this building here? Excuse me. Yeah, 44,442 between the two buildings.
Okay. So they're each approximately about 20,000 square feet.
So we're replacing five live-work units, which might have been total 2,000 square feet each, 10,000 square feet, and 12,687 square feet of commercial for 26,000 or 23,000, 22,000, with 44,000 square feet of building. Is that correct? I'm just estimating live work units, unless you have the exact number handy.
Yeah, you know, I want to say it was around 24,000 for the original project.
Okay.
Versus,
44,000. So, yeah. Right. Thank you. Oh, that's it.
Wonderful. I have a couple of questions. So this is a housing project, and typically with housing projects, we see an allocation to affordable housing. Can you talk about why that's not required here?
That's not required because it's a rental project. That's only required for sale units.
Okay. Caltrans had made some comments in their requests. I'd like to go back to that and ask. So one of the things that they had said was that Caltrans continues to insist that further analysis is necessary in order to fully assess the impacts of development in the area. Can you talk a little bit more about our relationship with Caltrans, and if Caltrans is asking for this study, can we deny that?
I think who would be good at answering this is our public works director. Because she does have a relationship with Caltrans.
Yes, we're very close. Rosemary Gaglione, Public Works Director. There are concerns, obviously, about the off-ramp at Stork Glen Annie, the northbound ramp. But that ramp has been backing up ever since I started working for the city, which was in 2007. Mm-hmm. So we are talking with Caltrans about that because something needs to be done. And I don't know that it's an issue of future development in the city. I think there are things that need to be changed about the interchange.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a follow-up question? The applicant had mentioned that there was a recent transportation study that they only got the data for this afternoon, so I know we're all still learning here. But he said it was equal to the number of vehicles at that intersection was equal to or maybe better than at construction. Can you talk to that?
No, I can't.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't have that information. I haven't seen a study on it, per se.
Okay. But there was a recent count of cars at that intersection or no?
I saw an email that there was a count done in October. How that relates to expectations, I can't say.
Okay. Oh, do you know who did that count? Who performed that?
No.
Okay.
At this moment, no.
Thank you very much. I think that's all I had for you at this point. I just like a little bit of background and clarification. I apologize, this is my naivete on this one, but can you talk about the difference between what would be required for circulation of the addendum versus a full CEQA? I know because it was an addendum, it didn't have to go through as much review, but can you just tell kind of paint a picture for us what the requirements for public review between those two are?
Sure. First of all, I wanted to back up with a previous...
Oh, sorry, thank you.
Previous question to clarify a little bit more about the addendum. Mm-hmm. We did require the technical studies, including the traffic, to be submitted prior to making that determination what environmental process we would be going through. Okay. And because there was no evidence that there was greater impact in any of the categories, environmental issues, we were able to process an addendum, prepare an addendum. And an addendum does not require public review process, like a negative declaration and EIR does. But we did, like I said, we did post it on the website and the library, and it made it available at the city.
And I just want to add that the addendum, you know, we were planning on going forward with this project back in the summer. So we prepared an addendum, and that was released. And what Mary mentioned, it was up on the website. It was at the library. It was available here at City Hall back in July. And then we have revised it based on the revised project, and that's been available since the beginning of this month. But and if you notice in your addendum that there are places where it's underlined and struck out, that just shows where the changes happened. But and if you notice that the bulk of the information did not change, was not modified in any way. So the majority of the information within the addendum has been available since July.
And what additional steps would have been required if it had been a full CEQA?
A full EIR, we would have had, it would have been circulated for 45 days, for public review for 45 days. We would have prepared, any comments we would have gotten, we would have responded to those comments, and then the final EIR would be released for a minimum of 10 days before your hearing. But I will say that I don't believe we got any comments on the addendum since it's been out on, you know, available since July.
There's been a little bit of talk about the rooftop space as open space. Does the city of Santa Barbara have any guidance on what roofs can be counted as open space and what amenities have to be on those roofs? Have we looked at that for any other cities?
I don't know what the code. I just know that that in the definition of common open space, they list different components or areas that can be counted, and rooftop was one, but I'm not sure, you know, I don't know the specifics. The intention is that it's open space to be used by the residents.
And does the applicant know of any other requirements of other cities? I know you had looked at, you'd named a number of other cities. You had named a number of other cities that allowed for rooftops to be used as open space. Are you aware of any requirements or guidelines that they provide as to what would make a rooftop count as open space?
For instance, the city of El Cerrito up in the Bay Area, one of their guidelines is that, you know, a maximum of 30% of the total common open space may be rooftop open space. So that's their expectation is 70% be on the ground, 30% can be in the air. Let's see here. Redwood City, in terms of uses, they're indicating rooftop gardens and rooftop landscaping, including rooftops above parking structures, may be used to satisfy the open space requirement. Design accessible for outdoor living, recreation, pedestrian access, or landscaping. Moreno Valley, you know, the uses, courtyards, playgrounds, recreation facilities, multi-purpose rooms. So they're even taking structures into account that's a common common amenity that they're including as part of an open space because the tenants and the users can utilize that. City of Long Beach, doing a lot of progressive planning these days. Indoor recreational space also may be substituted for common use. So that's taking it, you know, to one step beyond which we are proposing. City of LA also includes recreation rooms, roof decks, and that was the extent of my limited research.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you're
welcome. Additional question. What percentage of the rooftop open spaces is landscaped?
What, in terms of our proposal?
For your proposal.
Probably 60, 70%, something like that.
Great. And let's see. There was a comment in Let's see, on page 10 of the proposal, where it talked about the soil export traffic generation. And there was a comment in here, the soil export would not create any additional impacts and no changes to mitigation measures are necessary. The truck trips would create additional wear and tear on the impacted roads. However, the amended product would be conditioned to address damages to roadways resulting from the soil hauling. Can you talk about addressing those damages and what your project is doing to do so?
As is typical with any issuance by the city of a road encroachment permit, they'll document to an extent the pattern by which the heavy truck trips are proceeding from the freeway, utilizing city streets, and then ultimately, typically, going back to the freeway and going elsewhere. So to the extent that there, and Rosemary can speak to this as well, but to the extent that there are significant damages, then that would be something that the applicant would be responsible for. Ultimately, we have to pay fees as part of that road encroachment permit, and I believe part of that, and Rosemary can maybe speak to this, is a fee capture to address, slurry seal and things of that sort relative to that type of truck activity.
So it sounds like that hasn't been assessed yet, but will be later in the process?
Certainly the haul route has been designated, and most of these streets are, we're proposing a very small 9-cubic-yard truck. Most of these streets, I believe, are rated for, that type of weight. But I'm not an engineer, so we can speak to others about that.
Just on this subject, can I ask the general location of the ultimate destination of the soil?
Soil's sort of an interesting business. With the last project, ultimately, we deposited some at Cabrillo Business Park. There was a need for soil. The goal, ultimately, of course, is to balance on site so that you don't have to import, you don't have to export. The world's less than ideal at times. So we try to truck it as the least distance as possible. Ultimately, there is a commercial group in Buellton that accepts willingly soil for a payment.
So the soil may unfortunately ultimately end up in Buellton?
That would be the worst case scenario, but ultimately the hope would be that it would be closer.
And the expectation, though, is that it's going to head north?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I believe there's some additional comments from staff.
Yeah, I just want to point out that if you look on page 81 in the conditions of approval, which would be conditions 4A3-4, just want to read that. It says, repair damaged public curbs, gutters, sidewalks, and roads caused by construction, parentheses, including soil export, to the reasonable satisfaction of the public works director or designee. So we have it covered in the condition that our roads are repaired based on any damage caused by this project.
I think Commissioner Smith, did you have a comment?
I had one follow-up question in relation to Mr. Fuller's comment, but...
That's fine. This is an appropriate time.
Okay. And this is, I think, mainly for staff. My recollection had been about the property that it had initially, I think when Goleta inherited or got the property from the county, I believe that the site had been some kind of industrial and then later changed to a residential designation because of RENA requirements. That had been my recollection, but I don't know if that's correct. Does staff know?
I don't know the background to that. And
my recollection, this is going back some time. This property was at one point called the Teledyne site, so it was owned by the Teledyne company. Of course, you may recall that there was the bank building on the corner and Univision, so that certainly wouldn't have been the mobile home subdivision. I think the mobile home subdivision portion was towards the northern half, and then it might have... Everything but the corner was a mobile home subdivision, and then the corner was some industrial research park. I think so.
Did you have any follow-up questions on that?
No.
Okay. Do you have a commissioner?
I have one more question. This question is actually for Ms. Kai. I'm wondering if the city is legally entitled under the circumstances of this project not to approve any new building on the subject site?
You certainly can look at any project and see if it's in the best interest of the community, assuming it meets all of the city's requirements, zoning, and
so if a park, if the entire 1.84 acres was devoted to a park and that was deemed to be in the best interest of the city would be entitled to enact that requirement.
I think you have to rezone and do a general plan amendment, and mm-hmm. certainly when you rezone and do a general plan amendment, the applicant who owns, or the property owners, have a right to dispute okay. that. So, you know, Mr. Brown looks like he's ready to address that. I'll let him.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Peter Brown. I represent the applicant. I'm an attorney in town. If I understood the question, it was, does the city have the absolute right to designate the 1.84 acres as a park? And I don't, my opinion is that wouldn't be appropriate. This is not a separate project. It's a single, the development plan is one property, one project, one permit. This is an amendment to that plan. So at this point, I don't believe the city or the Planning Commission has the jurisdiction to, as Ms. Kai said, to sua sponte, just say, we think a different land use is appropriate, and that's what we're going to find. Also, this project, as you may have seen from the one of the slides that Mr. Best put up, this project is already, the project as a whole has already paid 93% of its park impact fees. So almost all park impacts of this project have been mitigated. And if the commission or the city were to say, well, now we think an additional park should be added, that would be excess to what the park's impacts are. So that would be not consistent with how park impacts are designated, and it would basically be beyond what's constitutionally permitted. Also, I think, as Ms. Kai said, this does not appear on the city's open space plan in the general plan as a park site, which is generally a precondition. If you have any further questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Of course, it could always be rezoned. Could it not?
It would go through a whole process. I mean, the city council would need to take that action to do a general plan amendment and when you rezone certain properties, property owners have a right to dispute it. So it would go through a whole process.
Sure. But actually, we are recommending rezoning tonight.
Right, yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Are there any follow-up questions from any of the other commissioners?
I have one more question. Mary, can you speak briefly to the height of the elevators that are part of this project? The elevator structures?
Elevator towers.
Yes, thank you.
The elevator towers, the zoning requirement for building height for the zone is 35 feet, and the buildings itself are 26 and a half feet. The elevator towers are 40 feet, and there is a provision in the zoning code that allows elevator towers, chimneys, and features to go up to 50 feet. So they're meeting zoning code.
Great, thank you.
Just a quick follow-up on that. For the new construction that would be going in, what's the next tallest component of the building?
Just the elevator towers.
Yeah, so the elevator towers are 26 feet. What's the next shortest feet?
No. The building, both buildings are 26 and a half.
Oh. Okay.
And then there's two elevator towers on each building that projects up to 40 feet.
Okay, and that goes up to 40. Yeah. Thank you. Any other follow-up questions from the commissioners? Wonderful. At this point, we will open it up to public comment. And then I think we'll take a break and then allow for the applicant to respond to public comment and the discussion thus far after the break. And then we will close public comment and go to deliberation. So at this point, I want to open it up to public comment. I have three public comment letters. If anybody else has a public comment slip, please go ahead and submit it to Madam Clerk here, to our Madam Clerk. And with that, I will start with Ms. Deb Dello.
Hi, my name is Deb Dello, and my property has probably been impacted firsthand by the West Star property more than any other property outside the West Star property. I own the La Concepcion Animal Hospital at 7126 Hollister Avenue. It's at the corner of Hollister and Felicia. And I've owned it since 1994, when it was a big field, and for a long time it was a big field. When I first learned that West Star was developing the property, I was very apprehensive about what to expect. When West Star started grading, a lot of the work was going on the property. The workers were always very respectful. There was not too much noise, and they respected the hours of operation. After heavy rain early in the project, water came pouring into our operating room. We have thousands of dollars of equipment in there. I was 3,000 miles away at the time. I notified the city of Goleta. They notified West Star. And West Star immediately sent workers over to help us move equipment and figure out how we could reroute the water, and sent an engineer eventually out to make sure that there wasn't any damage underground to the property. And the water problem, I'm not sure what it was or how it was fixed by West Star, but the recent rains, we haven't had any real significant problem from that, from the development. West Star sent an associate and a representative from the electric company over to explain what they wanted to do regarding the electric poles on the side in the front of our property. So I met with them, and we had some concerns, and they addressed them, and the finished project is not as impactive as it might have been had we not had the discussion and they worked everything out. Owning that business for 22 years, there used to be a lot of accidents right in front of Santa Felicia and Hollister, or right where their West Star property begins. We've actually seen less accidents, car accidents in front of there, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because the light that goes into their property, people are stopping and not going down there as quickly. But we do notice a difference in that. We use the businesses in the village. In fact, we have kind of an agreement with PetSmart there. You know, if they have people coming in and it's more than they can handle there, they'll send them over to us. We see a large increase in our business with people coming in from the village. And I'm there usually from 8 in the morning till 7 or 8 at night. And families from the village are out riding bikes, taking walks, walking their dogs. So I was very apprehensive in the beginning, and I'm very pleased with the way it's impacting me now. And I can't speak for anybody else in here, but just our business and the fact that I'm there 12 hours a day seeing what's going on. It's been a positive thing for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dello. And now I'll go to Ms. Barbara Macy.
Good evening, Barbara Massey, Goleta. Good evening, commissioners. This project should be denied because the addendum is inadequate and it's bad planning. There has been no justification to the changes requested for the general plan amendment, the rezone, the development plan, and the associated setback modifications. There is a failure to address various environmental impacts. Many impacts are claimed to be the same as the original project, even when they aren't, and they haven't proved it. The impacts and mitigation are not only referred to by letter and number in the final EIR, which isn't provided, but that makes the information inadequate for the addendum. A number of impacts aren't even discussed. There's nothing in the addendum about the impacts of various encroachments and setback modifications. There have been no discussions of the rooftop gardens or about the safety and other problems involving rooftop gardens. Grading and height of the pads were not discussed, but could affect the height of the buildings, the appearance, stormwater, runoff, and other issues. And there are a number of impacts that need to have additional information. There needs to be things such as views from street elevations, elevations, lot line site plans showing setback encroachments. This project should have had story poles because of the concerns of the neighbors and the public about views. Some of this information was available in the staff report, which came much later, but it should have been in the addendum. I noticed several problems with the conditions of approval. Condition 12C says that trucks hauling soil, sand, or loose material can be uncovered. Trucks must be covered. It's state law. The worst problem is the planning director is given authority to change almost anything with substantial conformance determinations. This was done in a number of times for the development, which explains why there are so many problems with it. What is approved is what should be built. The encroachment and setback modifications need to be eliminated to create a project that fits the site. The problem is this is too many apartments in too little space. The development has already had negative impacts on the area, and this proposal will make it worse. It is not that the council planned and wanted for the area. It is piecemeal zoning and changes Hollister Village. Don't make Lita's most disliked project worse yet. Please deny the resolution recommending approval of the amended project. Thank you. And I should mention, there's nowhere in the information that shows that the tower for the elevator will be anything near 40 feet. Look at it, and it doesn't indicate it. It looks more like 35.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Massey. With that, we'll go on to Ms. Kathleen Werner.
Thank you and good evening. My name is Kathleen Werner, and I'm a resident of the city of Goleta. I had a lot of my questions were answered in the presentation from both staff and the developer. My main concerns, though, do have to do with the open space. When I sat down and looked at the numbers that staff came up with regarding the amount of open space that was required for this amended site project, I came up with a different number than staff did, and I was kind of curious about that. I realized that staff did not use the 1.84 acres to calculate as the total area to use for the 40% calculation. So that's why when I did my calculation, it looked like there was there needed to be more open space. So the staff came up with a minimum open space requirement based on 1.42 acres at 40%, which is 24,742 square feet. When I looked at the zoning, residential zoning, and the density that's allowed, is 20 per acre. When staff calculated the number of units that were allowed in this adjusted project, they used the entire 1.84 acres. And if you do that, you get the 7.9 units per acre in the report. However, if you use the same 1.42 acres that you use for open space, if you use that for the number of residential units allowed, you come up with 23.2 units per acre, which is above the 20 per acre limit. I might have missed something. I'm not a planner, but that was just my general public look at the documents. You may be able to answer those questions. with that difference? Why you use two different areas? Okay, I see my time is getting close to being up. My other concern was about the rooftop gardens, the rooftop open space. I would ask the Planning Commission to really look closely at approving this. When I looked at the original project, I saw the 0.42-acre open space was really close to the part of the project that's already completed. And to me, that says that it was intended as a neighborhood park. You know, it's really close to the original area. So they moved it down to the lower southern south part of this new triangular amended project. And it seems like it's changing now. It seems like it was initially intended as a neighborhood park, which one thing would mean that anyone could go there. It would be open space for the public. If you account for the rooftop, my question is the public now allowed to go up there as part of it being open space and open to the public? And I'd have concerns if I were living there, seeing strangers come up, you know, by my apartment. Although I must say, when I looked at the online drawings, schematics, it looks like a charming place. And I think if I lived there, I would love to sit up there and watch the sunset. So that's my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Warner. With that, I'd like to call up somebody that I'm having trouble reading the last name, but it's Leslie.
Oh,
I apologize. If you could say your name when you come up, that would be great.
Sure. Good evening, Planning Commissioners and staff. My name is Leslie Lund, and I live directly across the street from this project at 118 South Glen Annie Road. And there's a few other neighbors that we live directly across the street. So we've been going through this process for a good 6 years, lots of planning, lots of construction, lots of dirt, lots of dust, lots of broken curbs, but we've made it. Most of it's built. Anyway, but it does remind me of what I said a long time ago. What if they build it, and what if it comes out wrong? How do we change it? So this is the last little piece, and I hate to see it go up, and then everybody suddenly go, oops, maybe we should have made a different decision, different direction, something like that. I'm still having trouble understanding the streetscape. I'm not, the other projects weren't supposed to be that tall. I remember Mr. Keating said, no, 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 it's not elevated on a 10 to 20 foot pad. But if you look at the other 273 units, they're definitely up above. So being that this set of apartments is closer to our front door, it's right on Glen Annie, are they going to be built on the same 10 foot elevated pad of dirt? I mean, they talk about moving dirt, but yet the road, the village way, goes up at an incline. So you can't really make it level with Glen Annie without dropping this 10 feet and removing 6 feet of dirt on the side of Glen Annie. So I'm kind of confused on all that. Do you want me to keep going? Oh, okay. So that was our big concern, because we're like, okay, so we're looking at our front door. Are we looking at we're two-story. So are we looking at a two-story building like ours with a rooftop garden on top, which would be three stories? Are we looking at a two-story building on a 10-foot elevated pad of dirt with another story on top, roof garden? Which, by the way, rooftop garden sounded great until you put lounge furniture and umbrellas and parties and happy hour and, you know, beer and 5 o'clock and satellite TVs. I mean, I must admit, on a clear night, people over in the village have really good parties at their pool, which is a really great space for them. So anyway, the other concern I had was entrance and exits. It looks like there's only one. That's okay for that many units. I didn't know if somebody would be trying to exit out the back into the actual Pyology R&B furniture. My other comment was lighting at night. When they did install the other 274 apartments, the lights were really, really bright. And you could basically light up our whole neighborhood. So they did put some mesh screens on. But again, these two sets of apartments are closer to our front doors. The other ones are way far away. So I'm just a little bit nervous about the lighting and the great wattage and, you know, how bright is bright. The other section did install a beautiful brick wall with an iron screen to try and mitigate traffic lights when people come home and park. They tried really hard, but it kind of doesn't do it because the elevation is still up high. So the cars enter the apartment units. They're still up high with the two lights facing everybody's top bedroom windows. And then as they come down to park, they hit the screen and that light is blocked. But still, as you curve around and drive towards that section of houses where we are towards the railroad tracks, the car lights are right in the top bedroom windows. So I kind of wondered how the parking works on this one. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else did I have? Party on the rooftop. How big is the park? Oh, your construction time frame. And what if there's, are you taking away all the dirt? And what about if there's too much dust and too much dirt? And oh, what time? Remember last time, I think construction was supposed to start at 7, but we had trucks arriving at 5 a.m. in the morning, blocking Glen Annie, letting their engines go. So again, I would ask the same consideration of maybe construction times be a little bit later, let everybody go to work and go to school, drop kids off, and not have this big traffic jam in the morning. But I'm not sure. It sounds like a lot of the trucks are going to go through the middle and over by Smart and Final versus using that whole Glen Annie way. But last time there was a big circular element, and we found tons of semis and dual trucks coming from Arizona just blocking everything while people are trying to go to work. So I believe that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lund. The next person that I have is Vivian. And if you can give us your first and last name at the podium, that'd be great.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name's Vivian Lee. I'm just here to give my experience with Hollister Village. So as a student living within the apartments, I do feel safe as a resident, not because of the security, but I'm also grateful to have an opportunity to work in one of the stores within the plaza. So I work as a manager at Pokemon, and it makes it convenient for me to just simply walk to work since I don't have a car this time. Also, I have great new nearby food options and grocery options as a student who only has a bike. And I'm just glad that there's a mix of small and big businesses that are in this general area. And me talking to like my neighbors and also the customers that come in, they tell me that they're happy to have this store as a great addition to the city. And by bringing in more businesses and housing, I'm just saying that, yeah, there's revenue to the city, and also there's more options and convenience to the community. And I just want to say that change is bound to happen, but it's good that, you know, we have the city working with the developers, and you can make it something that the overall community would appreciate and enjoy having. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lee. Now I would like to invite Mr. Mark Keene.
Hello, my name's Mark Keane. I'm one of the owners with my wife, Pickles and Swiss. We've got a sandwich shop there. So since we've opened up the sandwich shop, our business has been phenomenal, which has been great. We love supporting the community that's around us. And, you know, thanks to Westar, you know, we wouldn't have been there. But our business has exceeded thanks to the great community. So going back to the community is really great because there's families there, which with the new expansion will be even better for us, for our business. We've employed at least 15 people thanks to Westar, the company, because our business is growing and growing. So I'm definitely for the new expansion. So that was it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Keane. Now I would like to invite Karen Montgomery. Ms. Karen Montgomery.
Hi, Karen Montgomery. So Mark Keane's my husband, and we have Pickles and Swiss, a sandwich shop too. Same one, and one in downtown. So obviously it's good for any business there. But I think because downtown, I feel like a lot of people are moving out. It's very difficult to buy a home, and the rent demand is crazy right now. So the more you can produce places to live, then the more you can produce companies to come in, and people, if there's nowhere to live, there's not enough companies to support people, and the driving 101, you know, people live in Lompoc, it's not realistic. So I'm completely all for it. I think it grows a community. I think It'll help the Camino Real Center. I'm just, you know, the more you can bring in and you know, be open to the change, I feel like the more everyone can grow from it, because I feel like businesses are having a problem in general with the online situation. So, you know, it's kind of, I'm completely for what they're doing, and I think it'll be a good addition. So that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Montgomery. I do not have any other speaker slips. Did anybody else want to submit a speaker slip? Okay, not seeing any additional speaker slips, I would like to go ahead and close the public comment. And at this point, oh, sorry, no, I don't want to close a public comment. I want to take a break, then we'll have response from the applicant, and then we'll close the public comment. So we do want to get the response from the applicant in first. So we'll take a brief break, maybe about 10 minutes, come back at 7:55.
Clouds rolled by a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. Long as there's the two of us, we've got the world. And
all right, so if we can call the meeting back to order. We are first going to hear from the applicant with any commentary that they have based on what the recent discussion and public comment. Then we will go ahead and close the public comment period to close a public hearing to then move on to deliberations. So first, our applicant.
Good evening, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to respond to comments. If Troy can get this slide to work.
Oh. Well, I think we timed out. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, timed out.
No problem at all. So first, we'd like to discuss the common open space and these rooftop community gardens. And what we really like to stress is that, it's common open space for the residents and guests of the project as defined in the zoning code. It is not public open space for public use. So this would be private. It would be locked. You'd have a access card to get up there. And it would be restricted hours, and we have on-site management to control any issues that are that might happen up there. The intent of this space is to be quiet, passive, reflective, open space gardens. Soft seating, no active, no amplified music, no televisions, no fire pits, no barbecues. Soft seating and landscaping. Go up and have your coffee, read the paper, read a book, sunbathe in private, not on the ground. We feel like it's a great way for residents to kind of enjoy the open air, and it fulfills the intent of common open space. Leslie would like to thank you for your patience and all the inconvenience for you and everyone that lives over there. We appreciate your comments. We would love to meet with you for the headlight issue and kind of figure that out. And we're very open. It's the first time we've heard that it's not working. So just let us know. We'd love to fix it for you. And then in general, we've got Katie Klein, our landscape architect, who's designed these rooftop gardens to kind of explain the programming of them and their benefits.
Good evening. I'm Katie Klein, as Connor mentioned, with the Landscape Architecture Office for this project. And I just wanted to talk about some of the benefits of the resident roof garden. It was designed with seating areas, as Connor mentioned, that are very passive recreation. And we also designed it to maximize the planting space. So it's similar to what we would have designed that was on the ground. So it's very comparable to that. And there's also a lot of benefits to the roof system. to the environment. So it would provide urban heat island mitigation. So basically, it would be reducing the reflection and cooling the environment in comparison to a normal roof. So that's one really great environmental benefit to the community. And it also is managing stormwater. So it's a best management practice to capture the stormwater, and the roof would do that and actually clean the water and prevent it from going directly into the storm drain system. And also, just like if the rooftop was on the ground, it provides habitat as well. And also, it's a great amenity for the actual building residents because it reduces the indoor temperatures, and that reduces the energy needed to cool and heat the building as well. So there's a lot of great benefits to the rooftop garden as well as a passive recreation space. And then to address the comment about the headlights, we are going back to DRB to study that and look at that, but we're planning on addressing that with shrubs to screen the headlights, which is done very often in parking lots to mitigate that issue. Thank you.
There's also some question about how this would fit into the kind of built landscape and the grading and heights of the buildings and how it would all fit into the neighborhood. So we've got our civil engineer, Scott Smith, here to talk to you about that.
Good evening. I'm Scott Smith, civil engineer, here to address the grading. Troy, can you pull up the picture of the triangle? Maybe not. Maybe not. Don't worry about it. The grading, that the triangle piece, the final condition, it'll come down about 4 feet. There we go. So the brown piece out there, that'll come down about 4 feet for the final condition. So the finished floors of the new buildings will be lower than the existing Village Way, which is the road that bisects the projects. In addition, the new parking will be lower than that road as well. Anything else? Thank you.
What level with Glen Annie?
Village Way.
Oh, which is at an angle.
Could you come back up to the podium and answer that clarification about how it would level with the roads next to it?
It's going to be about 2 feet lower than Village Way, which is the road that meanders through the project.
At what point?
At the entirety of the length of the orange triangle.
So I'm under the impression that Village Way has a rise in it and a fall in it. So the 2 feet, is the grading on the property going to rise and fall, or is it going to be an average of 2 feet? I mean, is it going to be a level property?
Let's say an average of 2 feet, but we're trying to mirror the landscape so we don't have a drastic grade differential.
Between the way and, right. Okay, but where the pads are for the buildings and the parking area, I mean, I can understand trying to not have drastic slopes between, the way and the parking areas. But I presume that the building pad levels are going to, the finished floor levels are going to be at some point and rather flat, and they're not going to rise and fall with the road.
No, so the road undulates to accommodate drainage.
Okay, and so the building, the finished floor, the first floor, is going to be approximately how far below?
I'd say a foot and a half.
Foot and a half, yeah. Okay. And then, so do you know approximately how high it would be above Glen Annie?
I'm going to guess it. I don't have the plan in front of me, maybe 3 feet.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So lastly, I'd like to address the comments about the entryway. And when we first took this project to DRB, there was a single entry off of Village Way. It was a DRB comment to make two entries off of Village Way, so that's why we've got the loop system. There's also a comment from DRB that we had some parking on the south, kind of on the retail side. We pulled that up into the driveway there as a response to DRB comments. So all the parking is north of the buildings. And that concludes our response.
I had a couple of quick questions while you're up there.
No problem.
Somebody had mentioned the truck arrival times. Can you speak to that?
So the truck arrival times, as we were requesting them, would be hauling from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. And that wouldn't include staging ahead of time, as Ms. Lund had raised the concern about?
If we did any staging beforehand, we would do it on site. But, you know, I think we could control that, the trucking company, Zach. Yeah,
okay.
That would include staging. So.
She had raised some concerns about lighting as well. Was that addressed with the DRB, and would the lighting levels be less intense than the current project?
There was a photometric plan included in this packet, and there was no issues with the lighting there. We are aware, you know, we did learn from our first project, so we did adjust the lighting there. And just to speak to the roof decks as well, there will be no lighting of any kind, except for, you know, kind of safety lighting at probably 18 inches, but no above head lighting up there.
You mentioned no fire pits or barbecues on top of the roof decks and no amplified sound. Is that written into guidelines, or how do we know that that'll be the case moving forward?
That's our intent, and we will stick to that. It's not written anywhere.
Okay. And the last one I had from the public comment, somebody had raised the concern about uncovered trucks. Could you speak to that?
I believe we were required to cover all dirt export trucks, and I believe that that's been a condition all along.
Okay. Can staff speak to that?
We can look at that. I mean, the condition, actually, it's not 4 inches, it's 2 feet. Hmm. It says, ensure that all haul trucks hauling soil, sand, and other loose materials are either covered or maintain 2 feet of freeboard, which I believe is 2 feet below that. So, I mean, we can check on that. And if it, or if you want, you could strike that maintain 2 feet.
I think on some other projects we've had commentary from Air Pollution Control District. Has that been sought on this project?
Yes. They just submitted their standard conditions, which we incorporated in the conditions of approval, but they were aware of the project.
Okay. Did they have any concerns about the truck covering?
No, I don't recall that there was any specific in their letter, you know, because there's code requirements for that.
Thank you very much. That was my only follow-up. Did any of the other commissioners have any additional questions for the applicant? This is the last chance to do that. Go for it.
Regarding the roof decks, what is the depth of the well?
Call up our architect to speak to that exact term.
And can you also describe the well for our public as well?
Good evening. My name is Serafin Moranen from Architects Orange. What we are doing on a lot of projects are roof decks, which is a current kind of a new phenomenon, not just in this city, but also other cities like Irvine, for example. What they are these are pedestal pavers in which they're not that much further or not that much higher than the roof deck itself. We would just need a plastic frame to hold either concrete pavers or composite wood plank panels, and those are both typical types of covers that would be on those pedestal pavers. So and the roof well itself is approximately 3'6" above the finished floor to hold. You know, if we had a balcony there, we wouldn't want anyone to fall out. So at a minimum, it's 3'6". But if you can look at all those drawings and elevations, we weren't interested in just capping it with a 3'6" line. We wanted to make sure that the architectural profile is very active, so it's not just a very flat top. And we wanted to make sure that the roof well is well hidden, but yet there's architectural projections and profile to make sure that it's a very intriguing profile from the outside and not just from the inside.
So the depth can be the height of the ridge lines for the parapet roofs are varied in their minimum of 3'6".
Yes, sir.
And 42 inches is the code requirement for like a railing, is that correct?
Correct.
Right. So yeah. The minimum of the code 40, requirement.
42, I'm sorry, yeah, 42 inches.
Yeah.
Above the finish.
Which
floor.
Is 3'6".
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions, Vice Chair Fuller? Any questions, Commissioner Smith? Okay. With that, I will go ahead and close the public hearing, and we will move on to deliberation. So at this point, I open it up for commissioner dialogue on the project.
Who would like to start us off?
I'd be happy to. I have to say that I am very concerned about this project. It's an addendum to a completed project that, in my view, is already unfavorably viewed by many residents in Goleta. Together with the Hilton Hotel, the West Star project and the Hilton Hotel have generated considerable negative response to development in this community. I think we've all heard that. I note that we received 12 written comments via email before this meeting, and I believe every one of them was opposed to the project for the reason that concerns about overdevelopment, but specifically about the increased traffic, the bulk of the projects, and obstruction of views, I think are generally the concerns that I've heard before I became a planning commissioner and were presented in the written comments we received before the meeting this evening. I'm also concerned about several modifications to the general plan and zoning ordinance, concerned about allowing variances for setbacks, concerned about allowing encroachments on the setbacks. I think we have guidelines and requirements for those for setbacks in our general plan and in our zoning, and it seems to me that we all the builders are aware of those and we should stick to them. But I'm most concerned about what appears to be a serious violation of the open space requirements. We've talked about that tonight. The fact that the rooftop space, which consists of 9,690 square feet, in order to meet the open space requirement, I just don't understand how including that is consistent with the intent of open space requirements. It seems to violate the very intent of open space requirements. The rooftop, as described here this evening, sounds like a very nice, desirable feature for these two buildings, but I don't think they are appropriately considered as part of the open space, notwithstanding what other communities may have done in that regard. And frankly, I don't know that we can really consider what other communities have done without hearing the particulars of those decisions. I would say that I think, as I indicated in a question earlier tonight, what I'd really like to see is this property devoted to a park. I doubt the developer is interested in doing so, and I recognize it might be legally problematic due to the City Council's original approval of the building on the 1.84 acres. What I would favor is a significantly scaled back version of the proposed project, perhaps 17 units instead of 33 units, or a residential indoor office structure that complies with the open space requirements without use of a rooftop, but that would be consistent with the settlement agreement. I think that either one of those would potentially be acceptable to me, but as the project is currently proposed, I cannot support it.
Would any other commissioners like to comment on the project?
I guess I'll go next. I share some of Mr. Miller's concerns, although I have maybe a slightly different take in some areas. I do think what is unique about this situation is the fact that there was this lawsuit that happened in between the time of the original project proposal and now. And I recognize that that was a challenge for the applicant and has impacted, you know, decisions moving forward. But I'm concerned about you know, the impact of one person, you know, on a community as a whole. I think it's important that, you know, we consider, you know, our community as a whole and the project as a whole. It's definitely a unique challenge in this circumstance. I appreciate the applicant's project that it includes studios and one-bedroom units. I do think that that's a need in our community, and that rental units are needed. We have a really low vacancy rate here. But I do share Mr. Miller's concerns regarding this issue of the open space. I went ahead and reviewed the definition of the common open space in our zoning code. And my reading of it is that it needs to be space that doesn't include other developed areas. And so under that definition, I appreciate the attempt at creativity, but this is the current code that we have, and I have a hard time accepting that use for common open space. The other concern I have is I do think that the rooftop community garden piece sort of, I think it presents a sort of a significant design change from when this matter was before the design review board. So as a separate matter, I don't know if we could ask that DRB take a second look at this revised plan, because I think there may be important design comments from some of their members that could influence the project. I also wonder as well, there has been some discussion this evening about, various issues, traffic, some of the elevation questions. And I think it might be helpful if some of that information were added into the addendum information. So that was another concern I had as well, that there is an opportunity that there may be an opportunity for staff to flesh out some of that addendum document to include some of the items that have been brought up here tonight. As I do think a residential project will have generally a lesser impact than the original project is proposed. I know that open space is really important for our community, and that's the piece I'm having a hard time accepting in this project proposal.
Commissioner Onan or Vice Chair Fuller, would either of you like to go next?
So thinking through the process and obviously a lot of things jump up. Commissioner Miller, the idea of having it all be a park, obviously that's very attractive. And maybe we could even negotiate a price with the developer right now on what the cost of that land. This land's been entitled. It's been entitled with commercial development and some residential in the form of the live-work units. So we understand where it's coming from. I'm surprised we aren't a little more excited of the fact that we are getting this kind of unique mix of housing opportunities for our community. As you mentioned, the flats, the units that are no bedroom, I'm sorry, I've lost the terminology,
studio.
Unique product in the new rental market, certainly for our community, and something that is very much needed. Though, again, additional one bedrooms also support that. The fact that these are constructed that have accessibility on both floors, the talk of the elevator towers. Well, we got elevators that are going to allow both levels of both buildings to be served to accommodate people who may have disabilities or who may just not prefer to walk up and down those situations. So I'm very pleased to see that. To have a project that actually is a reduction in the impacts from our entitled project. So if that entitled project is what it says, entitled, we are also moving in the right direction as far as reducing some of the impacts from this project. The people who live and work in that area, we've heard from some of them tonight, and I've heard from some of them about what they enjoy and what's positive in that environment. I think it's accomplishing the goals that this project was set out to accomplish. Walkability, connectability, reduction of car trips. Positive upon positive, yet of course we are all sensitive to the fact that we're in an environment within our community where the fatigue from development is real. And of course, the fatigue from unfinished development is even greater than finished development. And as we move forward, we mentioned a few of the things that are coming, you know, the hotel and those kind of things. As these things finish, the fatigue from that will, of course, will be a little different. So I understand all the other components of the project. In other words, to accomplish this, we have to have the lot line adjustments. We have to have the change in the land use. We have to have the change in the zoning. They just follow through. Or we can leave it the way it is and allow potentially the commercial or mixed unit development to come forward. The modifications, I would completely agree with staff's assessment that those are all relatively small modifications. And in projects that we have seen come through, especially in a smaller, you know, large undeveloped project can design everything to fit within the box, the ideal box that we create as planners and hope that people can fulfill. Here we have the last remnant of a larger development. And even in our as-built environment throughout the community, we see that it's necessary and appropriate to accept those kind of modifications. The environmental reviews have all, in my mind, been satisfactory and addressed the issues. The parking specifically, that we've had some discussion of, I'm sorry, traffic specifically. Again, we have to measure this within what that overall project is. It would be really nice to understand exactly what's happening on the street all the time, but that's not how we approve projects. That's not how we move forward on them. We have to use the data to evaluate those at a point in time. So I am the open space. Let me, because obviously the rooftop issue seems to be of concern for several of us. The overall project is in compliance with the requirement for the private open space, the 40%. A portion of that now, of course, the project was in compliance before. We added some residential. We need some more open space to accommodate that. And the overall project is in compliance as long as we are recognizing the rooftop. I haven't seen anything from staff that suggests that that rooftop is in conflict with any of our ordinances or our requirements. Maybe it's not specifically called out, but it's certainly not prohibited. I think it's a unique and beneficial amenity for the residents there to have that. And this area has adequate open space within it. The total project has ample open space within it. So I feel that there's going to be an opportunity if you don't want to use rooftop amenities, you can use ground level amenities directly adjacent to you or perhaps across one street. Again, very effective development, a creative solution to be able to allow this to go forward. And I'll close that, my comments, in saying that I still see workforce housing as the most critical need if we're going to develop anything within our community. What we really want to look at is an opportunity to address some of these housing needs. And this is going to add to that. We're going to have maybe 50 people who now have a good place to live. Of those, 35 of them are people who are in our community already. They're our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers. They're here already. Maybe a few of them come from outside of the area. So, I hope we can find a way to support this. I understand the tension around it, but this is a solid amenity to this development. And there's a lot to embrace here.
Thank you, Commissioner Onan. With that, I'll pass it to Vice Chair Fuller.
So I'm going to take up the other side of that argument. I think there's a considerable portion of our current residents who do not want to see Goleta grow more. And I think that's been expressed in some of the comments that we've gotten, irrespective of our own personal interests in, you know, the economy of Goleta, the housing for people. There's people that are already here who do not want to see more people here. And, you know, that's what this proposal is to add more residences for more people that the people who are here already do not want, at least a portion of those people. And I don't think that we should be blind to those people and not give their wishes consideration while we're sitting here, you know, choosing whether we're going to be allowing somebody to do this or not. This is a discretionary approval, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, it's a general plan and a rezoning. I do understand that the alternative to this will be likely an office building. I want to say that with consideration for the work and effort that's gone into this proposal here, because obviously this is not, you know, this was a considerable amount of time and money just to come up with this and put this before us. But in some ways, an office building creates a more absolute mixed-use project, because now you have office space, you know, working space within, you know, absolute walking distance to potential residents. Am I not right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's not adding more people. That being said, and that would still fulfill the requirements of the settlement, but, you know, just to take Commissioner Miller and Commissioner Onan's thoughts a little further, I really do think that this would make an awesome passive botanical park. Now, I also believe that it isn't something that the developers and owners should just, you know, bestow upon the city out of the goodness of their heart. The city, you know, should pay them properly for it, because, you know, this is their land and this is their opportunity that they're giving up. So it would be something that the city council would have to, you know, decide whether it was within our means and then within the desires of the city as a whole. It's also possible that citizens could organize themselves and raise funds to purchase it if the developers were willing or so inclined to negotiate that. You know, it's been done in the neighborhood, maybe not the city of Goleta, but it's been done on the South Coast here several times. You know, if there's people in the that have become wealthy through our UCSB and the businesses that have happened here, I really do think that that would make a very nice contribution as a public park. It would complement the existing residents and apartments that are already there. It would complement the existing businesses that are already there. It would create an additional attraction to the area, but it would also create an aesthetic that, you know, isn't there to be enjoyed by everybody. But that being said, you know, that's not up to me to do. That's up to, you know, the city council or other residents to take it on themselves to do that. I just want to say that I'm going to listen to the people that I believe do not want to see the city grow, despite the demand for housing by people. And the people that are here, they want to enjoy what they have and the quality of life they have without more people here. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Fuller. With that, I will share a few comments of my own and then take it back to the commissioners for more of an open dialogue amongst all the commissioners.
One thing, I guess what I do want to start with is a thank you to Commissioner Onan for bringing up the issues around affordable housing. I was very excited to see the smaller rental units that could provide housing to folks that do already live here. I think there's a lot of folks that work in this area that have really struggle with finding access to affordable housing. I think we see that in the RENA numbers, where we do have space available for housing, but not a lot of housing. and so we're still struggling with how do we make sure that we can develop enough housing spaces. And I think that's a real concern, and it is something that I am very excited about with this project, is the potential for housing spaces. That said, I do have some concerns with the project. I'm concerned that there's not detailed information in the proposal around the green roof. I would have liked to see the landscaping plans and more details about what that green roof would look like. I didn't really see that detail in here. I would have liked to hear DRB's comments on the green roof. I'm also a little bit concerned about setting the precedent for allowing green roofs as open space without a broader consultation with the community. I would love to see us address this issue when we go through the zoning ordinance. I actually am more open to the idea of a green roof potentially counting as open space, but I think that needs a full discussion of its own with community feedback. I'm a little bit worried about approving it through project, so that's something that I'm concerned with. I'm concerned with Caltrans comments and that they expressed a need for additional studies and would like to work with Caltrans to address their concerns before moving forward with the project. I think this project is substantially different than the original project. It includes quite a few new units. And a very different design to the space. And so I would have liked to see a longer review of the addendum and review documents as this is a lot of information to go to. As somebody who spent quite a few of my hours in the last week reading through this, I can't imagine somebody from the public reading through all of this since last week. And I know there was some available last summer, and I appreciate the clarification on that. But I think it was more broadly advertised in the past week, and I'm a little bit concerned. I'd like to see more opportunity for public to give feedback on that. I talked to a number of community members who saw it for the first time last week. I'm a little worried about the kind of getting into a pattern where we always do lot line adjustments. I'm seeing that the reason for the lot line adjustment here is a lack of space, and I feel like that's almost the case for every project we review. So I'm a little bit worried about setting a precedent where we always adjust. I shouldn't say lot line, setbacks. I'm worried about changing the setbacks and changing the requirements of our general plan and zoning plan consistently from project to project, and I'm not seeing something exceptional that would allow for the setbacks to be smaller than normal. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. I'd also like to hear from staff on if there's any potential to pace this with other projects so that we don't have all of the construction happening at once. Thinking about the cumulative impacts component of the AIR, I'm not sure how much leeway we have to look at all of the projects going on versus an individual project, and that's something I might need legal or staff counsel on. But is there any way to pace this with some of the other big activities happening right at that intersection? And I would like to see some additional language about covering the grading trucks. I feel like that's a pretty easy thing to do. The other thing I wanted to note, because it was some conversation about who's really filling this housing, is this bringing in new residents or really more of a support to existing residents? Potentially, I know that City of Santa Barbara has occasionally put in requirements for some of their projects that local residents and local workers have an opportunity to rent spaces before it's made more available more broadly. Maybe that's something that the applicant could incorporate into their project.
At this point, what my leaning would be to do on this project would be to ask for a continuation where this could go back to design review board to get that additional feedback on the green roofs and to consult more in more detail with Caltrans. But I would like to see, but I am very excited about some housing component coming into this area. So that's my leaning at this point. And at this point, we can open it up again for more of a lively debate amongst all the commissioners.
I just have a couple points of clarification. I agree the desirability of having the studio and one bedroom apartments is a good thing. And I also agree with Commissioner Onan that I share your concern about the workforce housing in Goleta. I think that's a really important issue. I guess my only difference is where it's put, but I definitely agree that that's a concern. And I think there was this figure given to us early, 1.9 jobs to one housing unit. I think that tells a lot and supports your concern in that regard. But I don't think that these apartments that are being proposed would be considered affordable. I don't know that they're in that category in terms of what the rentals would be. I guess that's more of a question than a statement.
Can I comment on that?
Yes.
Because it seems to me that there's an affordability by design, which is limited in that there's studio apartments and there are rental apartments. But I also would like to build on what you said to say I would actually like to see a higher level of affordability in terms of a commitment to affordability. And potentially that's also something where I could see, say, the setback adjustment being granted if there was a commitment to affordability on the space. That's the sort of thing where I would see a greater commitment back to broader good to the community where that might be appropriate.
And I would agree with that. Thank you. Just one other comment. I think there was a comment that the overall project is in compliance as is. The project right now is in compliance with open space requirements. And I would just like to point out, I think I'm correcting this from my exchange with staff, that it is not in compliance unless you add the 4.2-acre park, which doesn't yet exist, in the amended project.
The 0.42-acre
park. Yeah, there's the right. Project that's being proposed includes a 0.42-acre park. That park is combined with the other open space in the already built project in order to satisfy their open space requirement. So,
and that park was always a part of the development, just in a different location.
Yes.
So the additional open space requirement now is about for this additional residential.
Right, and the only way they can meet that is with the rooftop.
Right, and my debate on that one is that, okay, rooftop open space is not for everyone. If it's different, it's not the same as what we would have on the ground. But because of this multiple use location and the existing of all the other open space, and of course that 0.42-acre park that will be right next door, which is part of the whole but still accessible, people will have the ability to utilize open space at their discretion. I like a rooftop. I like it on the ground level. So I would agree with you. I would be, if it was exclusively or predominantly or even dominantly changing open space for a rooftop or an internal structure, I would be hesitant. But in this environment with the variation of what's available, a nice amenity and accommodates the goal. That's how I got to accepting it.
Okay.
And without the detail of what it looks like, I mean, that's another story. But DRB's job, of course, I think, is to flesh out that side of it. And I didn't mean to step on
you. No, that's fine. Okay. That's fine. But just to see for an agreement on this, that it is true that, in fact, the entire project will not meet the open space requirement without the rooftop.
Right.
When it's all said and done, if the rooftop is not considered open space, neither the amended project or the entire project would satisfy the open space requirement.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah, agreed.
Commissioner Smith?
I would just echo maybe your comments. You mentioned, you know, maybe getting some additional, you know, information, having potentially have DRB review this matter. I would be open to that because I just think that there are some key design concerns that they could have really valuable feedback, and especially, you know, with you know, their expertise in this area, that they may be aware of certain, have certain recommendations or ideas that we don't have. And I think that is a significant change from when the proposal was before them the first time. So I'm open to that idea.
So just from our process, if we were to advance this to City Council, mm-hmm. and City Council were to make their decision and it would move the project forward, the project naturally does have to go back to DRB and has to go through their final.
Right, I understand that.
So, and DRB being the arm of our agency that deals with those issues, they will go through that. Final round.
So. Right. I think that this is a big enough change from when they first considered the matter that I think that their input at this point could be valuable. That said, at the same time, I don't want to waste anybody's time either. You know, because I'm hearing some major concerns about the project as proposed. So if that's going to be I'm open to that idea because I think it's a significant change. It is something that's a new idea, and I think that they'd have valuable input. And I think having that at an earlier stage, it would be better to do it earlier rather than later. That being said, I also don't sort of, you know, if we as a body are inclined to just, you know, recommend not approval, I certainly don't want to waste the applicant's time sort of, you know, running through something that's just going to be, you know, something, a procedural thing.
All right. So I'll just make a comment, you know, irrespective of how I may vote on this. I think our important job here is not to, you know, like, get into the fine-tuning of what the landscaping is going to be on top of the roof decks. It's more, are we going to allow roof decks to be an open space or not? You know, if all the members here decide that we, you know, at this point in time, because we haven't otherwise enshrined them in a code, or we haven't had any other public input on them, that we don't want to do this at this time, well, that's a decision that we can make now, and we can make it without, you know, further input by the design review board. If it's something that we feel that it's something we can accept and may actually have positive opportunities for the residents, you know, sitting up there on the second floor, above everything, you know, obviously you'll be able to look out at quite a distance. It'll be, you know, quite a view shed up there. You know, if it's something that we can conceptually approve or agree to as open space, well, that's something we can do tonight, I think. Rather than, you know, postponing this and asking for further input from, you know, for fine-tuning it, you know, I think what we're dealing with here is whether we, as a body, think that that should be open space or not. That's my take on it.
Good question.
I guess the piece that I would add to that is the design helps me determine whether it should be open space. So, for example, I don't need to nitpick as to what types of plants are going to be there or not be there. But
to one of the questions I'd asked earlier, I mean, how much of this is landscape and garden? Is this an out? Is this mostly a cemented area, or is this a green space? So that affects how I think about whether it's open space as well. So I think it's hard for me to conceptualize this and approve this as an open space with so little detail about what the space is going to look like. So I think that's part of my concern here.
Chair, if I could just ask the question, because that was an interesting way to approach this. Is, in other words, we have a fundamental stick point here on the open space. Okay, well, we want to know what this rooftop open space would be like. What would we need? What would we need to be able to say that would be a valid open space or not? Or would we? Do we have consensus here at this time? It says no, that could not be considered valid open space. Because if we do answer that question, if it is in the negative, then the obvious thing is either to figure out how that can be changed or how we could get enough information to overcome that negative. Mm-hmm. I think, Mr. Fuller, isn't that what you were kind of saying? That's a fundamental here?
That's part of it. You know, I just think that, right, we should deal with the concepts here. It may be easier to deal with them. I mean, are there some, if I may ask the staff a question, you know, are there requirements for landscaping in a common open space, or, you know, versus hardscaping, or, you know, do we already have some delineations as to what percentage can be what?
Sorry,
if I may bring that on you.
No, that's fine. Actually, we don't, because if you look at our definition, and I've been keep meaning to want to read this to you, what the definition of common open space is, it includes things like tennis courts and basketball courts. There's no landscaping typically on those. So the definition, and you have to remember, you know, I'm sure our code, you know, this code that we're working with is the one we inherited from the county and is from, what, the 80s, maybe, if I'm being generous, right? and rooftops weren't designed for open space. But the definition, the common open space definition is common open space shall include but not be limited to recreational areas and facilities for the use of the prospective residents or guests of a development such as a tennis court, swimming pool, playgrounds, community gardens, landscaped areas for common use, or other open areas of the site needed for the protection of habitat, archaeological, scenic, or other resources. Water bodies may be included, but shall not be credited for more than 5% of the total required common open space area. Common open space shall not include driveways, public or private streets, parking lots, private patios and yards, and other developed areas or hard-surfaced walkways.
So can we?
And Siri picked that up, that I was asking her a question.
So with that definition, what how do we see this as fitting in or not fitting in?
Well, to me, open space is anything that's not the building. By that definition, I mean it's the parking lot too, right?
No,
not the parking lot.
No.
But it's not the building. The building itself is not considered the open space. So in my view, the rooftop is nothing more than part of the building. So I guess I don't need to know any more about what the design of the rooftop's going to be. To me, that isn't the issue. The issue is, should something that's on top of the building be utilized as open space? Because it seems to me that the open space requirements exist, and this is where I'm at a handicap, because I wasn't around when we wrote the general plan or when these guidelines were written, but it seems to me that the open space requirement goes to trying to eliminate bulk of buildings, trying to have more elbow room, trying to have the open space. That just by its nature, open space, so that we're not We don't have a congestion of buildings and a mass of buildings. And in counting the rooftop, to me, does nothing to add to that concept. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a different concept for open space and why we have that requirement. But that's how I see it.
Interesting, because, of course, you've seen rooftop tennis courts, rooftop swimming pools. It sounds like, from our definition, not in our city. Yeah. Not in our city. I don't know that we have either one of those in Goleta, but in other locations. And it sounds like that was envisioned or within the code suggesting that that would be acceptable as open space. So I think part of the open space is about access to recreation and activity and outdoor enjoyment as much as perhaps taming the density or the intensity of development.
I understand what you're saying, but isn't... I get, maybe the question is, does the open space go to the benefit of the people living in the building, or doesn't it also go to the benefit of the public who are viewing this and living in and around the buildings? Yeah. In other words, the public doesn't get to use the rooftop, but an open space requirement is for the benefit of the public.
So,
if I can interject, the common open space definition is only for the use of the prospective residents or guests.
And if I may, you could put up a wall around your common open space and totally exclude it from view of the public. So, you know, there you go. You know, it's. But I understand what you're saying is a public, I mean, as the open space is a lowering of the density. You know, however, I go back, this is, 20 units per acre, more or less, depending on who's using what calculation, and that's not a high density development, you know, by general zoning standards. We have 60 units per acre at the mark, you know, on Upper State Street. So, you know, 20 units is a third of that. I think the maximum density in the Santa Barbara was supposed to be 20 units until they started doing this upward zoning on it. You know, and these are studios and ones where they could be three bedrooms. So, you know, yes, it's sort of a gimmick in a way to use, in my opinion, or some people could say that it is a gimmick to use the roofs as open space. But, you know, you can also think of, I come back to like the idea of like on a ship, right? You know, you have decks, and those are common decks, except for where there's balconies that aren't. So there's still a structure there, but people are still enjoying the use of that deck and enjoying it as an open area, you know, and a common open area to enjoy the sea and the views.
Commissioner Smith?
A quick follow-up. I believe we have two different types of definitions for two different types of open space. Is that my understanding correct, that there's a definition for common open space and that there's a definition under our code for a public open space? That there's two different types of that space. In this case, we're looking at a common open space, which is designed for the use of the residents. Is my understanding
there's
correct?
There's actually three types of, there's three definitions. There is the public open space. And then there's the common open space, which is for the prospective residents and guests, and then there's private open space. And in the zoning district itself, it only requires common open space and private open space. But does the zoning, the DR20 doesn't require public open space.
That said, when I look at our current, you know, I think it is important that we're, considering the project that is before us, sort of with the rules and regulations that we currently have, I do at the end of the day sort of come back to Mr. Miller's conclusion that that with what we have in our current code, where the common open space cannot include other developed areas, I just don't think the current project is proposed will meet that requirement.
Staff, can you speak to that last piece about other developed areas and how you're interpreting that?
Or how that's interpreted?
Well, we don't... I can talk. usually it's what we don't count towards open space or like parking lots, paved walkways. We would count a DG. We have counted DG walkways towards the common open space, but paved we don't. Anything covered.
What's a DG?
Decomposed granite.
Okay.
A pervious surface. A pervious surface we would count as open space. Pretty much it's anything that's a hardscape, anything that's got a impervious surface on it is what we don't count towards open space. But landscaping, pervious surfaces, rec amenities, those count towards the common open space requirements.
Could I ask a question, Madam Chair, for staff? Mary, how did staff arrive to the conclusion that this could be acceptable?
We did do quite a review back and forth, and ultimately our previous director, did not find anything in the code that would prevent our interpretation of this, of having open space on the rooftop.
Okay. So what do you think? Because we're still, we could do some kind of a motion to see if we can get by or where we stand on this one element. Mm-hmm. What do you
think? That's a good point. So many good points have been raised here today, and I really appreciate the discussion amongst the group. I think the piece that I also go back to is as you were describing what determines open space or not open space. This isn't a rec facility. It's not a tennis court. It's not a pool. It's not a barbecue space, as we talked about. So I think the ratio of hardscape, because you'd identify hardscapes and walkways as not being included, versus more of a green space, I would be more leaning to allowing it for a green space in my mind. So it, for me, it goes back to what is the actual design of this space. And maybe the swing vote on this one, I'm getting that impression. So I think I would want to see more pervious spaces, less paved space, in order for me to count a building rooftop as being an open space, because I think it's not clear in the code. I think looking at everything you've given us and the background that you've given us, I'm not seeing it as a full rec space. I'm, without knowing how much hardscape versus landscaping there is, it's hard to make another determination. So for me, it would make a difference to see the space.
Okay.
So our what's before us is a consideration as to right whether or not to make a recommendation to the council on the various elements of this project.
Maybe what I can say, so it looks like right now on the green space issue, sending it back for additional details would help the green space issue, because at least there would be, so I guess, are there three votes? So how are you thinking on green space, on rooftops as green space? I don't know if I got a clear sense from you, Vice Chair Fuller.
I think I could enjoy the views from the second story.
Okay. So I think we might get support on the green space. I think there's a number of other issues here that maybe we could take a pause on the green space to talk about some of the other issues, because I think that would determine where we go with the project. So for example, the other big issue or big elephant in the room is the transportation. And I will start with my concern that I'm concerned about the Caltrans letter. And I think that without their, with the concerns that they raise in the Caltrans letter, I'm not comfortable moving forward with the project without more support. Sure, that'd be fine. So Rosemary, do you want to talk to that?
Yeah,
Thank you, Chair. Maynard, I would like to. There are a number of things in the Caltrans letter. First off, there aren't things that you can hang on this project, regardless of what all of the other things, what anyone may think of the project. It's not causing Caltrans an issue. The off-ramp at Stork Glen Annie should have been a two-lane off-ramp. Somehow it ended up being a one-lane off-ramp. But the original plan showed two lanes. So that's a change and something Caltrans needs to look into. And we have brought this up to them. They're going to look at that. What Caltrans wants to do in metering the ramps at Stork would severely congest our local streets. It would back up into the intersection. We have Kai Riel in Fairview is a slave to the Fairview off-ramp, and that works really well. And everyone's really happy with Kai Riel in Fairview. So I don't think we want to do that to Stork Hollister. The other thing is the detriment to the city of Goleta Streets would not have a proportional benefit to the Caltrans mainline. You don't have a problem on the Caltrans mainline in your PM peak until you start to get down past Turnpike or thereabouts. So there really is no reason to meter at Stork. And this is a position the city is taking right now, that this is not something we're interested in doing. There's also things about cars idling, if people are concerned about air quality, et cetera. Ramp meters are not necessarily the thing that improves air quality, unless you actually have a severely congested mainline. What was the other one? That free right is not a fully free right, and Caltrans had already agreed to a free right when Marketplace was built, and then that ended up not being a free right, as my recollection. So conversations with Caltrans are very important. We are continuing those conversations. Problems on 101 and the interchanges and everything else are not, those are old problems. You know, in some ways I would argue they're existing deficiencies that you can't put on a new development to fix. So we need to continue, as staff is doing, in talking with Caltrans and trying to resolve these issues. But as I said, I don't know how long the traffic had been backing up on Glen Annie. But when I first came to work here in 2007, I was living in Lompoc, and at that time, when you got on at Los Carneros, you had to quickly move over so you didn't end up rear-ending someone in the queue that had backed out onto the main line. So there are problems, but I don't think this project is causing them or should be on the hook for that off-ramp.
So one more follow-up question on that one. I think the one I still struggle with is that they insist that further analysis is necessary, and I've heard that a lot from the community. I know that there were some recent numbers potentially taken about traffic numbers. I'm not sure if we fully assessed the effectiveness of what's been changed in the last few years. So I guess the piece that jumped out to me about the letter was, have we done enough study and analysis to know that this is the right approach?
That it's sort of a loaded question. So I saw some of the numbers that Scott provided me. Unfortunately, I got them late for me to really look at. Whether or not all of the traffic is working great in the vicinity of Stork Hollister, that's a different question from how is Caltrans facility functioning. And all I'm saying is, while we're still working on looking at improving interconnect timing, because we're still trying to dial in the interconnect. We've hired a specialist, someone who specializes in this. We don't have any other systems in the city that have a full interconnect. So we're trying to get that dialed in. We don't have a highway system that in Goleta is maxed out. And when you get into like impact fees and everything else, there's a concept of existing deficiencies. So you can't, it's sort of like renting out a room and you have a hole in the roof and you say, well, you can live here, this is your rent, plus you have to fix the roof. I mean, there's all, if you already have a deficiency on the main line, you can't come in and tell new development they need to fix the deficiency or that we have to analyze to somehow fix Caltrans main line. If there are issues that if a new development is going to cause new impacts, they have to fix it. But this is something that has been ongoing, excuse me, in regards to this ramp. And I will tell you that adding ramp meters is only going to make things worse in Goleta. So that is that is not something we want to see happen. Okay, we'll have them backed up around the corner and idling as people go through. So that's about all I can say. We have to separate the highway from the main line. And I think that when the improvements were originally made when Marketplace was going in, that was the time to double lane that on-ramp. It may have been the time to do other things to make those intersections and the interchange work properly. And I have been in conversation with Tim Gubbins, who's the district director of Caltrans, and his deputy, Eileen Lowe, and we are discussing what needs to happen to fix what's going on there. And it may be a number of things. It may mean getting that other lane going. It may mean a number of fixes. But I think Caltrans understands there is an issue there. And we know there is an issue there. The question is, should this project fix it? Should this project wait until this ongoing deficiency is fixed? And I don't think so. I think we would not have any good ammunition in that fight, which is different from, does this project screw up Stork Hollister so that we need that extra lane to get folks onto the freeway so they can get off of the Goleta streets and onto the highway? That's reasonable. And you have that nexus, and that's why they were required to do that.
Any questions or comments from the other commissioners? Okay. Thank you so much, Rosemary.
Thank you.
So can I open it up, though, because I think am I understanding that some of the concerns about this are also around transportation from commissioners, or did that alleviate your concerns?
I don't think it alleviated my concerns.
Okay, can you speak to that a little bit more? Because I think we need to talk as a commission to work through that.
I'm just now reading the information from Caltrans that I wasn't aware of. Apparently we received it sometime this afternoon, but I have not reviewed it, and I was reviewing it as we were talking. And I'm seeing in there concerns about the traffic, impact on traffic. And I think there's already, and notwithstanding other studies that have been done by ATE, I think there is a general perception that you build more units, there's going to be more traffic. And I know there's the comparison with what was proposed originally, but I view it as more units being built, the more traffic there is. I don't think it's more complicated than that. So I do have a concern about it.
Yeah, I'll just observe that there was some late information that's been included. So I understand that there was a letter from Caltrans. We have some minor changes. So, I don't know how we want to factor that in terms of our decision making, in terms of, when this information came to our attention, as well as, and if the public has had an opportunity to consider this information as well. Well, so it sounds like from what I'm hearing, we could go a couple different ways. From what I'm hearing, one option might be to, request some additional information. And the other option would be to actually, make some sort of recommendation one way or the other on what's before us.
Staff, is that accurate? Well, at this point, I should also say that I think one other option is that we can also split apart the recommendation if there's differences of opinions on different parts of the recommendation. We can also do that. Is that true or no? Or you have to do it as a whole project?
You could split it.
Okay.
You could split it. I mean, and then we'll pull apart the resolution, you know, because all the, you know, the findings are there for each of the individual project components, along with a recommendation associated with each part. So, yeah, no, that's, it is possible to split it.
Okay. Is,
Well, you know what, I'd like to raise a motion and see where that takes us.
Okay.
You know, we've been back and forth, and I still think we've got a couple of things to resolve, but I would make the motion that we continue the discussion and get the additional information to examine the issue of the rooftop being considered viable open space and appropriate for this project. And I say then we go from there.
And would you include the transportation issues raised by the Caltrans?
Yes.
All right. I'll second that.
Shoot, can I get one more amendment in there?
What else you got?
Yeah. Well, you gotta give them
if we have an opportunity here to clarify, and we're going to delay them for that, we should include everything there.
Yes.
So I think I had mostly just minor ones in addition to that. I would like the new plans to include the height of the tallest part of the building. I would like the side views of the buildings to include some sense of what we might see from the rooftop garden. So it sounds like there's a well, but like what's the, if you had a person standing on the roof, how much of that person are you going to see on the different sides of the building could be helpful. I'd like some information, I'd like some landscaping designs for the, sorry, for the rooftop garden and a percentage of how much of it is both greenscape and permeable. Any other things, can I just open it up for a quick, does any other commissioners want additional information?
My only comment is we may just want to be clear where we're requesting information from staff, the applicant, or both in considering this motion.
Chair Maynard, also if the motion regarding more information on the rooftop garden include DRB review.
Okay. Yes. So I think if we're taking the additional time, I would recommend to move towards going ahead and having DRB comment on this so we can get their feedback, especially since it sets a very different precedent than what we've done before. So I'd like to see how DRB is thinking about this.
So shall we reshape that motion?
Or do you just want to include them there? Commissioner Onan,
we can. Do we all think we got everything in within that? Okay, so we're down to we're also saying that we would like to have DRB input before it would return to us.
Yes. And the other things
and
that,
a list
chair.
Of yeah, a yeah. List of other things and just a comment. Good. The intention, of course, was that information that can be provided for us is not restricted from either side of the equation. Mm-hmm. I think because it's relatively new, we want to get whatever information we can. We'll have to make decisions with it.
Yep. So okay. I heard DRB review, design of the roof, heights of the tallest components of the building, and more data on the transportation analysis in particular, the recent studies that have been done, give everybody a chance to look through the Caltrans data and maybe just see if Caltrans wants to. I know there was a Caltrans letter, there was a response to a Caltrans letter. I'd love to see Caltrans' response to the second letter. So maybe just further dialogue with Caltrans.
Seconded.
Mm-hmm. Clarification, you said, I think you just said design of the roof. It's the design and the open space consideration.
Roof open space.
Yeah.
So more details on the roof so that we can determine whether it's an appropriate open space.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a design review board review of the green roof, a landscaping design of the green roof, the height of the tallest component of the building, including also some guidance from the sides of if people are standing on top of the building, what that might look like with the wells, updates on the transportation analysis that's been done recently, and final consultation with Caltrans.
Okay.
Did all of that get into the recommendation? Okay. Does it go back to you since you started that recommendation, Commissioner Onan, or did I just make a new
recommendation? Well, I think we I'll accept that as my motion, and we call yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, so you accepted that as your recommendation, Commissioner Onan?
Yes.
Okay, and do you accept that as your second?
Yes.
Okay, now we call for a vote, and we'll just start from the side and go down.
I'll vote yes.
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 I believe it. Our recommendation passes. Yes, our motion passes. Sorry. okay. So with that, I will return to my agenda. That's been so long since I've seen it. Okay. So I think that's everything for B1. Am I correct from staff? Okay, great. We are now go to the director's report.
Two quick things. We did get everybody's confirmation for the meeting on April 3rd. We'll probably let you know later this week if we're actually going to need it. We had reserved it for another project from another department, but I'm not sure that's actually going to happen. So we may not need it, and we may not. We do know we potentially have a meeting, an item for your the second meeting of April, or actually your only meeting in April that's on the calendar at this point. But we'll let you know later this week if we're going to need that or not. And then Commissioner Smith had gotten contact from a resident, and just I know if you get contacts from residents and they're bringing up issues unrelated to like an item on the agenda, but something to do with like maintenance in the community, or this one had to do with road work, if you want to direct them to, on the city website, there's something called City Assist. It's kind of hard to find if you have them type in City Assist in the search button. It's under the contact button, and then you can go to City Assist, but if they just want to type in City Assist, it's a way of getting things like that into our system, and then someone tracks it, and we follow up with the person. So, or you could just send it to us and we'll get it to where it needs to go. But if they want to go straight into City Assist, then we'll be caught and get tracked. So just as a suggestion.
I ask a follow-up, a related question that came up. In the past, it used to be the case that all of our email addresses were on the Contact Us page, and it's recently changed to a button where you can send an automated email, but I think there's a word limit on that. So I had one resident in this last cycle, or in this last week, say that they had difficulty submitting it through that because they went over the 2,000 word limit. So I'm wondering if we could just have our emails back on the Contact Us site again?
We can check with the person that manages our website to see if that's possible. We can ask.
Or maybe triple the limit?
I will ask. I don't have any control over that. Not that I have much control over. Anyway, that's it that I have for the director's report.
Any comments or questions from planning commissioners?
I have a brief comment. I did want to acknowledge that a resident had alerted me to for my email issue. And the way it works with our emails is that the city emails, and as a courtesy, the city will forward them to our personal email address. Mm-hmm. I believe what might have contributed to I was told that a few residents got a bounce back when they sent something to my city email. So I think part of the problem may have been that I have a personal Gmail account and it has very strong spam filters. Yeah. So I think it might have hit my spam. So anyways, I did wanted to state that I did receive those emails that were sent within, I did receive them within my city email account. And I'm hoping the fact that I changed things on my personal side, that that's been resolved, and I know staff is looking into it.
I could just note that I had the same problem that a resident commented that they got a bounce back on my email, and I also use Gmail, so that's a challenge for me as well.
The thing that should concern you all with that was the email I got back saying that it couldn't go through and said that it had been, you know, it was a bounce through to your own, gave me your email addresses. And you don't want that out. Now, Mr. Fuller's went right through. Eric's didn't, and you did. Now, that one, I checked with several people, and they didn't get it. So somehow yours went through, and it told me you didn't. Because I actually I printed them out so that I had them in case anybody needed to see what was sent to me. But I just thought you should know that that could be a problem if it's going to be showing your email address to people.
Thank you very much, Ms. Massey.
Wendy's looking into it. I gave her all the information.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. Any other comments or questions from planning? Oh, Commissioner Ms. Smith?
Oh, yes. And I just wanted to acknowledge that I did attend the League of Cities Planning Commissioner training March 1st through 3rd. And they make their presentation slides available. So if any other commissioners wishes to see those, we can share those. One thing that was discussed at the conference, and I don't know if that's already been discussed here before my time, was some changes under the Fair Political Practices Act, that if we reside within 500 feet of a project, that there's a request now that the city send a request to the commission for a decision.
Yeah, so the new rule is if you have to get a clearance letter from the FPPC if you live within 500 feet of a project to participate in the project. And then that's the Brightline rule. And it used to be we only used to look at 500 feet. Now it's sort of more of a reasonableness rule. If you live a little bit more than that, we still have to look at whether or not you would be reasonably conflicted. But the 500 feet, you definitely have to get a clearance letter. If you
want the person. Can I do a follow-up then on that? I did not vote on the last Old Town Village project because I'm at that 500 feet mark. But I rent my property, and so I would love to actually get a second opinion should that project come back, because I think there was maybe some potential that they might come back in the future for a change.
The rule does include leaseholds. It does not make a difference between ownership or renting of property.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thank you for that clarification, because I thought that was, you know, useful information to know. And then I did also attend the March 8th public meeting with the CityGate consultants, where they were receiving feedback on the planning department. You know, I know that we have staff here today, and that was sort of, you know, meant to be a safe space for discussion. But I at least wanted to acknowledge that I thought there was good feedback shared there, and it was an interesting meeting. Mm-hmm. That's all my comments.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I also attended the Planning Commissioners Academy and thought it was very beneficial, very informative as always, and it's great to stay up on the latest that's going on around the state and planning laws and practices. And to thank the city for sending.
What's the coolest thing you learned?
Coolest thing I learned?
Best to bring back to Goleta. What's one thing you learned that you can bring back to Goleta?
And I would have attended, but I was tardy in applying, and they didn't have room for me. That's my excuse.
You know, I think one of the most important things was It was really, my understanding was greatly impressed that, you know, we need to make citizens aware of all the information that we may have obtained prior to a hearing, and you know, disclose that at the hearing so that all the public can be informed of the information that we have that we may be using to make a decision.
Other commissioners, any comments or questions? Wonderful. I did have one question, is that in the past we've traditionally used action-based meeting minutes, and I was curious about whether there was a potential to also include in meeting minutes key points made during discussions, as I think that that would be helpful. But I don't know the most appropriate way to bring that up as a suggestion. And is that something we would talk about in a space like this? Would we agendize that? So I'm just curious about that.
Let me go back and talk with the city clerk, because she kind of sets the standard for what all the minutes look like throughout the city. Mm-hmm. So I'll take that information and then I'll let you know where we go from that.
That would be helpful. I think it would increase communication and transparency between Planning Commission and City Council. Make sure that, because oftentimes I think we support projects but do have some good points to make that could be incorporated into a project. And I think having a little bit more detail in the minutes could really help both the public who's seeing the minutes after the meeting. I know there's sometimes when I've wanted to go back and look at a meeting and don't want to watch the whole video. So I think minutes could really help the public and also help the city council. So I appreciate you looking into that, and there's not an immediacy to it. So when convenient, I would appreciate it. And that's it that I have. So I will ask if anybody would like to make a motion to close the meeting.
So moved.
Second. I'll say aye if you support.
Aye.